No.
Pastor Tom Farrell, I'm representing the Ministerial Association, and I'd like to extend an invitation to our city council and any of our staff on June 22nd in Sunken Gardens at 6 p.m. We'll be holding our annual all-city prayer. The churches gather together to pray for our community and the leaders of our community, and so you're certainly welcome to, and any of the community that would like to attend, they're very welcome to attend that. It's about an hour, and so I'd just like to extend an invitation to you in advance. I know you're busy, so hopefully you'll put it on your calendar for Sunday, June 22nd. I'd like to ask now if we could bow our heads for a word of prayer, please. Heavenly Father, I want to thank you for this community that we all so dearly love. And again, we come before you today and just ask that you might bring a sense of unity to this community, and that you would allow for the decisions that are in process and being made to be good decisions. The scriptures say that if anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, and that you give to all men generously. And so we just ask that you would do that for us, even on behalf of this community. And so we continue just to ask, Lord, that you would be with those who are serving even this evening, those who are in fire and police and protection of our citizens. We thank you for them and for the efforts that they put in continually. Continue to watch over them as they attempt to protect us as the citizens of this community. We're grateful for them. And so we just commit this evening to you. It's in your name that we pray. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor. I see someone else approaching.
Thank you. Good evening, Eric Greening. And this may be a redevelopment issue or a city issue or both, but I guess I will raise it now. When it became obvious that we were not far enough ahead with our application for Proposition 1B for the transit center, essentially, the process of site selection slowed down because there was so much else going on. But it seems to me that essentially the planning that we do in the downtown area kind of demands knowing where that is going to be so that we can plan appropriately around it. And so I just wanted to remind us that even though we may not be able to get Proposition 1B money until next year, next year will be on us sooner than we think, and it's something that shouldn't fall off the calendar. So I just wanted to remind everyone of that. And since we have a lot of other issues to deal with, I will leave the other 2 minutes of my time for whatever needs to happen next. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else want to speak? Seeing none, we'll close community forum. And on the redevelopment agency, we have two management reports tonight. The first one is a long-awaited report on the Colony Square project, and that will be covered by Wade McKinney.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the board. This evening, Jim Lewis is unable to be with us tonight. This is one of Jim's projects. Warren Frace is going to provide some background on the project, and then we have our consultant, Tim Kelly, here from Kaiser Marston to talk about the financing, and then I'll wrap up the project with some policy issues for you.
Good evening, Madam Chairperson and members of the board. I'll give you a quick little background on the Colony Square project. As most of us are aware, that's the project that's located right outside the front doors here at City Hall. It's located off of El Camino Real and Morrow Road. It's this shaded area right here. It's in our downtown commercial zone, and the project includes a 10-screen stadium seating theater, about approximately 30,000 square feet. That's located here in Building A. You can see El Camino Real's right here. The City Hall that we're in right now is located in this location. There's an additional 80,000 square feet of retail and restaurant space. Some of that's located around the theater and then in the buildings that surround the complex. There's 20,000 square feet of office space that's located on the second floors, and 67 residential units that are located mainly back in Building D. Those are on the second and third floors of the project. This is the site plan for the project. There's El Camino Real right here, Highway 41 over here. This purplish area is the theater. You can see the orange areas are the retail spaces that wrap the theater and wrap the area. There's a plaza, a town square in the center of the project. There's connections to the creek and connections to City Hall. One of the elements of the project that's in process right now will be coming to the council fairly soon is the tentative track map, the final map that then divides the site into separate parcels so that each of these buildings can be financed and constructed separately. Just a little background on the project timeline. Originally, this was proposed by Dr. Harris on the site. Everything else has been completed that requires underground work and utility work. So in terms of our next steps, we need to complete the site improvements. There's some minor sidewalks and accessibility improvements that haven't been completed. Those will be completed once the buildings are installed. So the site's about 90% complete. There's a agreement and CC&Rs, covenants, codes, and restrictions required to go along with the final map. Those are in process right now. As I mentioned, the final map is being wrapped up and will return to the council in June for approval. The applicants are working to obtain the final lease agreement on the theater. There's a bank loan that's needed to finance the construction of the theater. We're looking forward to the construction of the theater beginning fairly quickly, and then there's additional lease spaces that need to be worked out in the commercial building. In terms of project phasing, right now the project that we're considering is the very first building, which is Building A. As I mentioned, that's the theater with the retail spaces surrounding it. The second phase would be buildings F, G, and H, which are the smaller retail buildings that surround the square. Then Building D, which I believe is these buildings up in front. Right now, the applicant is envisioning a 3 to 5 year phasing for those components of the project. One thing you need to keep in mind is when this project was approved by Planning Commission, it was envisioned as being a single phase, and it's conditioned that the last building in the project has to be completed within 18 months of finaling the first building in the project. So there's basically just an 18-month window to complete the project. Obviously, that's not realistic in the current economic environment. We will expect an amendment for this condition to be submitted for the Planning Commission. That hasn't happened yet, but that will be necessary in the future. With that, I'll turn it over to Tim Kelly from Kaiser Marston, who is going to give you a background on the financials of the project.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, or Ms. Mayor, I should say, and members of the council. My name is Tim Kelly, and I'm with Kaiser Marston Associates. What we've been asked to do is review the financial status of the project, and what that means here is not the entire project. It's just Building A, which is approximately a 60,000-square-foot building that includes the movie theater to go forward and be under construction hopefully this year. And so the slide up there is the in total project cost, which is $50 to $60 million. There'll be another table to talk about phase one, but phase one costs about $18 million. We'll go through some of these numbers on the next page. So if you could, I don't know how well you can read this, but this is the status of the current financing for Building A. They have spent this is not counting land costs. They've spent approximately 5.7 and doing the site improvement work all out there that you see now. So that's in place. And that's been funded by a combination of cash and loans. Jim Lewis, if he were here, he could tell you that he met with a construction lender. And although that loan is not a formal loan, they have confirmed that they're willing to loan this amount of money against the project to fund Building A, which is $10 million, a little over $10 million. So you add those two together, and you have about $15.7 million that's been spent on site improvement costs, and there's a construction financing out there. On the right-hand side, on the expenses, the construction lender made clear that to go forward, there was an existing loan on Building A pad that has to be paid off, which is a $3 million loan. There's a site cost that have already been incurred, And then the development team has actually done working drawings, and they've been submitted to staff, and they've been priced out. And so the cost to build a building plus financing and other related costs is about $9.3 million. So the total cost to build Building A is about $18 million. Right now, $5.7 has been spent. $10 million is in pretty far along in terms of discussions with the construction lender. We believe that it's a real construction loan. So there's an additional $2 million that needs to be funded. So $2 million, $2.2 million is in the lower right-hand corner, which is the difference between the $15.7 million and the $18 million. We believe the economic value is there for the $18 million. That the real incentive for this development team is to get this property up and built. It has a theater lease committed. It will create significant value for the rest of Colony Square. Building D, I believe, could be sold. They could sell a parcel, for example. They could take out additional loans. They have the ability to borrow, I believe, against the Cowgirl parcel. And finally, they could redesign the project to try to bring down costs, but I think everybody sort of believes that's not a realistic alternative. I mean, it's too far along to do that, and it would not maintain the integrity. So there's several choices. One of the other choices, well, I don't know, this, without Jim here, our coordination on this, but I'll just bring it up. One of the other choices, or do you want to get into this? Okay. The city manager?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
The board directed us to review the opportunities to participate in this project or to help make the project a reality, really primarily focused on a potential loan. So as we looked at the policy questions, we believe in the first case the project is consistent with the city's economic strategy, vision, and plan for downtown as determined by the board in sending us to go forward. We looked at the opportunities for a loan. And in order not to require the prevailing wage or not to invoke prevailing wages on the property, which the project could not support, it would need to be a market rate loan. And we're unable to come up with the parameters of a loan that both met the owner's needs of Colony Square and would meet the agency's needs for a loan that would be consistent with the Department of Industrial Relations rules regarding the wage policies. And so we believe that the answer to number two has turned out to be no. We haven't been able to assemble a loan. There are not other financial incentive ways to incentivize the project to move this project forward without invoking the prevailing wage issues. And so we've really come to a determination that there aren't any risks. To look at the next slide, the city has put a variety of efforts. We don't want to leave you with the feeling that the agency hasn't worked hard at this. We have provided a variety of support services to this in areas of planning, the utilities and finances. It has been a priority project as determined by both your board and the city council with respect to our plan checks and our engineering. In fact, the permit for the theater is ready for to be picked up at any time. We have been conducting regular standing meetings with the city staff so that we could avoid any hiccups or pitfalls. There are public improvements around the project that we consider an investment in downtown, including the streetscape that really ranges from Rosario all the way to Morrow Road that will benefit Colony Square. We have certainly been working on marketing all of the downtown, including Colony Square, and even last week, Jim Lewis and I were at the Shopping Centers Conference, International Shopping Centers Conference, and distributed flyers on the Colony Square project. We also are a co-owner in this project. You may recall this building itself was once portion of Colony Square, and is really we had agreed in the settlement agreement that we would cooperate with Colony Square, and at the time there was some indication that if we did in fact purchase this building, it would help that project move forward. So we had purchased this building. We've put quite an investment into this, both in capital and bringing people into the downtown from city services. And the next slide, I think, is the is actually my wrap-up slide. We're really looking tonight to see if we've investigated the options that you had requested us. We have our expert, Tim Kelly, here to be able to talk about the financial issues of concern to the board with respect to potential loan or other issues, and we want to know if we have fully researched this or if there's additional direction that you would like us to look into.
Any questions from the board? Board Member Brendler.
And Wade, we removed the condition for the cost sharing for the developer as far as the Ped Bridge.
Yes, and we eliminated the Ped Bridge from the budget.
All right.
Board Member O'Malley.
Yes, thank you. Are there any other items that are part of this project that are off-site improvements? For example, the bridge was something that was not directly on this project's property, and we had requested that at an earlier time that they cover the cost. Since then, we've removed that. Are there any other items that are currently tied to this project that aren't actually on this project's property? For example, parking or helping with parking or...
There is a access easement requirement across El Camino. However, I believe they've completed it.
Okay.
I think the condition, the requirement.
I've seen. I've never officially met with him, but maybe run into him at a restaurant or something like that, and his partner. Just brief conversations didn't amount to anything.
Yes, I've had a number of conversations with Dr. Harrison, primarily around Main Street and Colony Days, and we have talked about this project often in a setting such as that. I think the only time I've met with Peter Hilf was, and I was hoping Jim would be here tonight, but I think as mayor, he and I went down and met with both partners and the bankers, and our goal there was simply to relay to the bankers that our community was very much supportive of this project and look forward to that 10 theater complex.
Okay.
Yes, I've had two or three conversations with Dr. Harrison about his project, and actually had a site tour, and I have had one very brief conversation with Mr. Hilf. I believe I first met him at the Just Listening workshop that we held, and I also spoke very briefly on the issue at the Chamber and Power Hour.
I have met with Dr. Harrison before. I did meet Peter Hilf once. I was on the Planning Commission when it was originally approved, the conditional use permit, and that's it.
So over the years, I've had several conversations with Dr. Harrison, probably averaging once a year. In particular, the last one was at the groundbreaking a year ago, and that was my last conversation, agreeing that this was an important project for the city and that we wanted to see it go forward.
Okay, Board Member O'Malley, did you have more further questions? Or?
No, I'd be happy to go on.
Board Member Luna.
Warren, staff report talks about a $400,000 streetscape improvements that's part of what the redevelopment agency is doing. With that map up there, could you kind of sketch what that's all about? Those are off-site improvements, right?
Yes. Let me go back to maybe a better view here that shows us the overall area. I guess that's not much better. But in terms of the area we're looking at streetscape, as Wade McKinney just mentioned, we're looking at a streetscape project that will go from Highway 41 up to Rosario, which is where the police station is. Along this section of El Camino Real in front of this project, we'll be doing median work. There'll be landscape medians. They'll provide channelized islands for the left turn movements, which will help the traffic flow and the appearance in front of this project. There's also a monument arch that'll say Atascadero, that'll be a gateway feature to the downtown, that'll be located basically right in front of the project. Then there'll be additional street tree plantings and upgraded sidewalk work along this area. So those will be the projects that the city is working on in front of this project.
And the total cost just in front of this project, not for Streetscape 2, the complete Streetscape 2, but just for this project is $400,000?
That's our estimate.
Uh-huh. And then the pedestrian bridge, as Mayor Brindler pointed out, was $70,000, right?
The anticipated contribution was $70,000.
$70,000, okay. So the other question I have has to do with the later phases. Would, for example, a cooperative venture using the redevelopment agency's affordable housing fund, which is $3 to $4 million, would that trigger prevailing wage if we did an affordable housing project?
No. If we owned a piece of property and did something on our with the affordable housing, that wouldn't trigger.
Well, suppose that it was a mixed-use project with some kind of affordable housing, so that it was a cooperative kind of thing. And the other question is, would the potential prevailing wage trigger on the entire project or just on this future phase?
Well, on the affordable housing, if you use the tax increments that you receive that are dedicated to affordable housing, what's referred to as the 20% money, if you use that, that does not trigger prevailing wages. But you can't use that money to build commercial space. You have to use it to build affordable housing. So, but, yes, you can use it.
Could it be a cooperative joint venture with commercial and then residential above?
Yeah,
that's affordable.
Of course. But you would have to have private financing for the commercial, and you'd have the 20% money, the affordable housing money for the affordable housing.
Oh, okay.
The other thing is a mixed-use development tends to cost anywhere from 15 to 30% more than regular projects because you're doing internal roads, lighting, and things like that, that normally if you have a lot in the city, basically that's already there. You have to provide this in this type of a project. So what we've done is we've gotten into a situation basically where a lot of upfront costs have occurred, and those costs will eventually be distributed over all the parcels as they get built out. But upfront, there's often a very significant equity deficit that was described by Mr. Kelly, and I believe Warren or Wade mentioned a little bit about that too. So that's the whole reason why we've asked the city to consider some sort of assistance. This project also had a lot of conditions placed upon it. To further elucidate the questions about the easements, we were conditioned not only obtaining the easements, that is, we had to convince Denny's operator, Denny property owner across the street, and Rabobank, that where the sidewalks go across and realignment of their driveways, all had to agree to do that. Otherwise, that would create further problems for the streetscape and median construction. But we're also conditioned to pay for that, and that cost is anywhere between $110,000 and $140,000. In addition to the engineering cost and other things. We were conditioned, as already mentioned, to participate in the pedestrian bridge. We're also conditioned, as previously mentioned, to do it in one phase, and not only because of the credit environment that most people are aware of, and particularly as it relates to housing, it does relate also to commercial lending. There is increased requirements that a particular developer or borrower has to meet, and the interest rates, although the interest rates have gone down, the interest rates go up to some extent in a situation environment that we have now with credit, because the banks are in a situation where they're not getting many depositors, and they have to make it up differentially, and it's usually by increasing the interest rate to the borrower developer. We wanted to do this in one phase, but it's been very clear that most of these developments are phased. And the reason is because typically different lenders will loan on different things. A residential lender, or as already mentioned tonight, affordable housing. I think we have expressed, I know to Jim, and I think Wade at one time, that we were interested in workforce housing, which is a little bit different than affordable housing. Workforce housing, I think, usually relates to government employees and other people that have a little bit of a higher income than the affordable housing market. And we certainly would be interested in looking at that as the housing market, you know, turns a little bit. The only other thing I'd mention is that I think there are still some areas of loan that could be explored. We've talked about it in different ways. I think the way we've discussed it, did not come to a fruition, but I think there still is a possibility there down the road, and would like to discuss that at some point again with Jim and Wade about that. But what we're looking for is some sort of assistance, if we can, to get by this first hurdle so that we can do what we feel is going to happen is once Building A goes up where the theater is, not only will be increased interest in the project to actually come forth and take lease space, but the city and the community will understand more clearly what it is we've proposed here. I think staff that has looked at the drawings and some of the council members will tell you that the architectural detail and so on is significantly greater than a lot of projects that come forth, and it's been a difficult thing to maintain that. One of the cost-saving procedures that we can go through value engineering is actually even changing some of the architecture. We've been reluctant to do that because we want to try to bring the project in as it's been conceived and dealt with, but circumstances have certainly caused us to look at that also. Thank you very much.
Dr. Harrison, I believe there's some questions from the from the board. Board Member O'Malley?
Yes. It seemed like there were two of the five options that you had mentioned. One was to do with loans, but my understanding is, and maybe it's really back for our consultant, but my understanding is the agency cannot make a loan, certainly outside of any market rate loans on this project without kicking in prevailing wage. We really couldn't do anything outside of a market rate without kicking in prevailing wages, and it sounds like that's not really something you're looking for.
Well, let me kind of explain it. I don't want to muddy the waters too much tonight. The way I've looked at it is maybe not for consideration at this time or in the near future, but depending on what the council's decision short term were, I think that still is a possibility long term.
My understanding is that once you have this in separate parcels, one of your goals is to free up get the parcel with the theater complex is on clear of debt so that can be used to finance the buildings. And this project currently has the Cowgirl Cafe as a separate parcel in existence, debt-free, and you've looked in the possibility of shifting the debt onto that and help.
Well, I think what we're looking there is one of two things, either to sell the Cowgirl parcel, which hasn't been entertained to any great extent at this point, but that is one alternative. The other one would be to actually put a loan on that parcel, and that could help us also. The way we're looking at it, I think, it now is kind of a backup situation because that creates some other problems for us, depending on the rent structure and so on. Or if the tenant decided he wanted to move, we had to get a new tenant, then we'd have a loan on that parcel without a tenant and so on.
Okay. I had my question was very similar to Board Member O'Malley's regarding future loans. So you're saying that you could possibly move forward at this time with the fact that you may have to come back later for a market rate loan? Do you feel like you could move forward at this time?
I think we could move forward, and I think that's been in the discussion. If Jim was here, I think he would talk a little bit more about the chronology of how our discussions have gone. We feel we can move forward, but part of that deficit that Mr. Kelly talked about, approximately $2 million, a lot of that has to do with tenant improvements. When you build a large project or any project, tenants that come in often depend upon the developer to front money to them to do their tenant improvement. So if you have, let's say, 40,000, well, in this case, it would be closer to 25,000, 30,000 square feet of space, they might request as much as $30 or $40 a square foot to assist them getting into that space. A lot of that money relates to that. So our requisite for some of that deficit is going to come on down the road a little bit, maybe 6-7 months into the construction. The problem is if we don't have that committed or understand where we're going to get it, we get to that point and then we don't have that additional money to get the tenants in. It's kind of a complex issue, but to answer your question, right now, without anything, we could trigger the loan and start going, but that adds even increased risk. I know risk isn't a thing that a lot of people like to talk about, and you know it's developer's problem, and you know I don't want to hear it. But when you do a project like this in a community like this that's suffering from certain leakage of retail space, difficulty in getting new renters in, and the credit environment that we're in right now, all of these things add to risk. And what you have to do is try to manage it in such a way that makes sense. Part of that consideration is this phasing. It would be almost irresponsible, both physically and emotionally and any way you could think, to go forward with the whole project, even if you could obtain the financing, because there's so many unknowns out there. So the way you do it is by the way we've designed it, so you have separate parcels and move one parcel at a time through there so that your risk on each parcel is less. So I guess, again, to answer, I think we could move ahead, but we have other needs, which are in the approximately $2 million need, that if we don't know where that's coming from, that adds just another major element of risk.
Okay, thank you. I said Board Member O'Malley has another question on that.
Yeah, we probably don't like hearing the word risk any more than you do with our budget. But one concern I have is my understanding, the only area we could have considered, it seems like, is possibly buying one parcel or looking at a piece of property. As you know, that would require an appraisal, and having some experience with that lately, appraisals are pretty much down. It may be lower than you're expecting. And if we did have something appraised and it turned out to be lower than you were expecting, that might be good for someone considering buying, but would that also jeopardize some of your loan potential you already have in place if it turns out you have on record appraisals that are dropping? I don't know what your relationship is with your existing $10 million loan and how that's going to be structured. So I don't know that we're a good partner. In some ways, you have more flexibility with a private lender.
I don't know if I can quite answer it, but basically we're undergoing another appraisal right now to reflect changes in the environment. The loan that we have now on the entire parcel is in excess of the monies that we've spent. Through our value engineering and cost-cutting and being attentive to detail, the infrastructure that we've put in has come in less than what our initial budget was. So that, for instance, we borrow $5 million, let's say we've only spent $3.5 million. So
reluctance of the bank to offer a second loan behind the original construction loan, and I'm just trying to determine if that's an accurate assessment.
Yeah, typically the banks don't like to have a second loan behind it because it means that if there's a default, I'm not explaining it correctly. They just don't want it behind it, basically. They feel they have enough encumbrance on the parcel, so they don't want to encumber it anymore. Banks are more difficult to deal with now than they were before. I think there could have been an application of a second on the parcel at one point, but I don't believe that would be the case now. One thing I would like to bring up, and this is something that some people will believe or understand or not believe if they so choose, is that projects like this are what they call catalyst projects. When you go to various forums, discussions, downtown association groups, mixed unit development seminars and stuff, many times there is a need in a particular downtown to have projects of some sort that allow a revitalization of that. Now, it can happen piecemeal, you know, one building here, one building there. But often there's a project of a larger nature, higher risk, more money's involved, that acts as a catalyst. And once that gets built or gets started, then other things happen, and then gradually the city, you know, is able to revitalize itself. And I think in today's environment, and particularly since the city is in deficit spending right now, a project like this has a lot of hope for the city in that it can then start turning around with the tax increment and getting more businesses downtown. I mean, that was our hope all along, and I think it's, in today's environment, in many ways, I think it's gained even more prominence in that regard. I think if you look around the town, we still have quite a few vacancies. I know a couple of buildings that were built at least a year and a half ago, they are still standing empty. And so the city needs really an impetus to start changing, and a project like this, as I say, is often called a catalyst project that can do that by incentivizing businesses to come down there because of a significant change that they can relate to.
Thank you, Dr. Harrison.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And this is a public comment period, so if anyone else would like to speak on this, please go to the podium. Welcome.
I'm Joan O'Keefe. I did get one of the questions answered. I was having some trouble understanding the $2 million shortage, and now it's a little bit clearer. I agree with the applicant or the developer that this probably is a catalyst project, and we're all looking forward to having it succeed. With that said, and based on the information provided by the city consultant and the staff report, I think it's premature for the city to get involved financially. There do appear to be numerous options, as the report states, that have not yet been pursued. The question about the project phasing, if the project phasing is changed, would this reduce the equity needed for the project? I know there's some controversy about this, but the basic reason for conditioning the project to be completed all at once was to ensure that the theater was built, and that has been given the highest priority. That will be the first thing that will be completed. The project was recently before the Planning Commission to change the map. This was related to the financing. The Planning Commission understood the reason, and it was approved, and this didn't change any of the building plans. Recently, the requirement that the developer share in the cost of the pedestrian bridge is removed. A number of you have addressed this. The city is going to pay for this, as they have already committed, and they've already committed to paying for streetscape improvements and a median that were all designed with this project in mind. So really, the city has made a big commitment and financial investment already in the project. Another important point, I think, to keep in mind is that the consultants say that not proceeding with the project does not seem to be an option because of the money invested to date, because the building plans have been approved and the building permit is ready. They have a commitment for the theater, and a construction loan is either finalized or in the process. So from my perspective at this time, it doesn't seem to me that a bailout by the city is needed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is David Broadwater, and on the screen right now, I would like to direct you to that sentence that comes from the Kaiser Marston report that Mr. Kelly wrote. Each of them could come up with $1 million or more each for a total of $2 million to come up with this shortfall. They could get a new partner to join them so that there would be more capital, but according to the staff report, Mr. Hill and Mr. Harrison are not interested in doing that because it would dilute their profit margin. Or they could sell off some parcels to another investor. And apparently that hasn't been very pursued much either. But also the staff report at the bottom there, you can see, says that the quickest way is to take one or the other of two of these three alternatives, leveraging other projects that the developers already own so that they can come up with over $2 million, or to bring in a new partner on this project. So I think that... Going for the city offering Mr. Harrison a loan is a bad idea at this time. And also, I've read both the Kaiser Marston report as well as a staff report. There's a lot of information in there about ways that the city could get around paying prevailing wages. That would mean to me that we would revitalize our downtown on the backs of the people who will put in the sweat and the labor in building the Colony Square project while we're stabbing them in the back and cheating them from a fair wage. I don't want to see that happen and see our city be revitalized while taking a fair wage under the state law from the people who will actually be putting the work into this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Dan O'Grady. I live in Atascadero. During my 35 years as a consulting engineer, I have been involved in many commercial development projects. Most were successful, but a few were not. Inadequate capitalization, financing difficulties, and construction delays were the typical telltale precursors of a failed development. Unfortunately for Atascadero, the current Colony Square project exhibits these signs of failure. They are a warning to you, a red flag, that this is a financially risky project that may not be successful. Reading the staff report, it's hard for me to believe, but here we are several years after the project was approved by the prior city council, wondering about the believability of project pro formas, shortfalls in financing, and construction delays. Why didn't the city have this information, plus commitment letters for construction financing and permanent financing, prior to approving this project? I mean, after all, this is a gateway project. It's not a small parcel on a frontage road. It seems to me that it deserved those kinds of guarantees. Some folks want to know who's responsible for this bad situation. We're looking at another 3 to 5 years of turmoil in our gateway. And it's not because of changes in the economy or subprime or housing. When this project was approved, cheap credit money was flowing like water, and the business cycle is a fact of life. Let's put it in terms most Atascadero homeowners can relate to. Let's say a homeowner hires a contractor to do several projects at their house for an agreed-upon price and schedule. And several years later, after not one project has been completed, the contractor says he wants more money, and even if he's given more money, he won't say when he'll complete the project. No homeowner would put up with that, and I don't think our city should either. I concur with the consultant's recommendation for the city not to loan any money on this project. However, I disagree with the suggestion that the city purchase a lot because the consultant fails to mention when or how the city could get its money out. Who would buy one lot in an incomplete development it does not control? The developer must live up to the promises he made 3 years ago. If he can't, he should sell the project to a firm that has the financial wherewithal and the ability to get the job done. Thank you.
I'm Eric Greening, and when this was in front of the Planning Commission for the land use approval, I was very strongly in support of it. It is a smart growth project, both in its location and its nature, its mixed-use nature. However, I agree with all of the concerns raised by the previous three speakers, and I am particularly in sympathy with Mr. Broadwater's concern about the prevailing wage issue being treated as something to avoid. In addition to the moral issue, which should be very much in our minds, since this project was sold as an economic stimulus during the construction phase as well as during the operation phase, something that would put money in people's pockets. But it's also important from an economic point of view to recognize placing a branch, moving the Atascadero branch library into this area, which would be a tremendous public benefit and service, but of course would not generate much in the way of sales tax, retail activity in the space that would be provided. Is this a forgotten idea, or was this somehow accounted for in these projections? In other words, would the projections be considerably less if the library wasn't there? Have we forgotten about that public benefit or possible public benefit? And one further concern with the tax increment financing that would be drawn on for this is it assumes constantly rising land values. And I think we need to explore the scenario, especially since land values are falling in many areas now, and certainly a struggling project might not generate the rising land values on its own, and the environment around it would be of falling land values. Who would hold the bag in that instance? Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Lee Perkins from Atascadero. And I've been really excited about the Colony Square. Every time I've been at the City Hall, I've looked at the sketches, and with each delay, I've been disappointed with, along with all the other people that are really looking forward to that development in downtown. I'm concerned that the developer mentioned a change in the architecture. This development is supposed to be a Atascadero showpiece, to be a premier development, and to be developed along the lines of the architecture that was agreed upon in the original contract. And it's my understanding that that can't be changed beyond 10%. So that is a concern I have. Also, the prevailing wage, others have mentioned it. I don't know how we could even consider this, to pay workers less than the prevailing wage. Construction workers are suffering now because of the downturn in construction, and to not give a prevailing wage would be another setback for them. And then a question I have is, I understood that this development was supposed to be a mixed use, and part of the development was supposed to include housing, but I did not hear that mentioned in the phases, if that could be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Joanne Main, 8940 St. Gabriel Road. First, I'd like to say Colony Square has met with many, many time delays not imposed by them. Time has been proven that time is money, and had this project, when it was originally brought before the City Council and Planning Commission years ago and moved on a faster track, we would already have a building built. And it's doable in other communities, and Atascadero seems to find a way of stalling and stalling and stalling till now we're in this economic situation that Dr. Harrison and his partners are facing. We need to be partially responsible for the situation and the position that they are in today, because had they been given some approvals earlier on, those sticks would be in the air by now. Prevailing wage, I just asked Dr. Harrison, and he said his construction workers earn about $45 an hour right now. That's a good wage. I don't think some of these people that are talking about prevailing wage understand the ramifications of adding 30% cost to a building. I think you need to do your research before you say that that's the answer to all of our construction woes and people being paid and underpaid for their services. We need to find a way to help and come together and bring this project forward. The idea of possibly purchasing a lot, you've done it already here. It's proven out to be a very good investment for the city. I would urge you to consider that, at least, to look at purchasing a lot in case that the loan is not an option, as reported by your consultant. So please do not close the door on this. Do not delay them any longer. Let's get this project moving. Let's show some positive respect for them that have come forward to try and do something positive in our community. I urge you to work with them. Thank you.
Thank you. And does anyone else from the public want to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close public. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll let him
take his
time.
Is it possible that I could speak again?
Yes, we're going to respond to public comment, and I'll definitely give you an opportunity to answer some questions, Dr. Harrison. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Mayor, Chairperson and board members, Hal Carden, citizen of Atascadero. To restate something that Joanne Main had just said, prevailing rate is another word for paying union wage. basically the developers and contractors, the laborers who would build this in this area, for the most part in a project like this, is to buy subsurface or air rights or larger parcels in a project like this that could be used for a parkade in the future. The city is land poor. The redevelopment agency has the wherewithal to finance projects that can participate. Looking to the future, there will be needs that we need to look to provide those abilities and capabilities in the future. Don't count any of them out. Look at the total picture of methods that the city can be involved. Don't look at giveaways, but look at what we need for the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else have a second thought about coming to the podium? No. Let's go ahead and close it. And I do have a list of questions. Did you want to, Dr. Harrison, respond to a couple of the comments, and then I'll go over the remaining questions?
Yes, I'd like to try to respond to a couple. I don't want this to get into a slugfest. Everybody's got entitled to their opinions, obviously, but I think there's some things that maybe people aren't thinking clearly about, or at least from my perspective, not thinking clearly about. One was the addressing of a prevailing wage. A lot of the construction workers that have worked on the project already were billing us anywhere from $25 to $65 an hour. Prevailing wages, as I understand, was set up mainly for taxpayer-funded type of projects, and it was a method of, as I think the previous gentleman, unionized individuals. Prevailing wage doesn't mean that somebody's getting a bad wage or not a living wage. That the whole process when you negotiate contracts and stuff, people can either take a contract or not take a contract. So I think this prevailing wage issue is something that is a little bit confusing for a lot of people. It certainly was for me at one point. I believe the reason the Kaiser Marston said that they would not recommend a loan was on the basis, and Tim Kelly can respond to if he wants, was on the basis that he did not want to create an environment where prevailing wages would be triggered. I don't think that the concept necessarily was wrong, or as I understood it, it's just that he was very concerned that we didn't put either the city or particularly us, because we would be the ones that would be indemnifying the city, into a prevailing wage situation. To try to answer Mr. Grady's comments, certainly what he's talking about, undercapitalization, delays, and so on, all can spell problems for a project. But I'd like to point out three or four things that have caused these delays. One was we have buildings on the site, and that had to be demoed, and that took about 4 to 5 months. You can't just start a project right then. Secondly, it took us 11 months to get a grading permit. We can argue off and on whose fault it was or that, this and that, but the last 2 months were responding to changes the city wanted as far as what they call bulb outs and walkways across the El Camino, which we agreed with, and it just took more engineering and more time there. So that added to it. Our initial engineering for the site, and I think there was some articles in the paper, indicated we had to do certain things, go down 10, 12 feet and so on, and we felt it necessity to bring in other consultants to revise that estimate so that we, in fact, could build the project. We were $1.5 million over budget then. By revising and bringing in new consultants, we came under $1.5 million. We saved $3 million, basically. Made it from an infeasible project to a feasible project. Unfortunately, that takes time, and also a little bit extra money there. This project was conceived with housing. And housing, as everybody knows, started taking a dump 1.5 to 2 years ago. That was after the project was approved. It doesn't make any sense to tear down commercial buildings and build new commercial buildings if that's all we were going to do. And so this created another difficulty in moving ahead at this point. The other thing that I think continues to be lost, and I know it's a concept that people can argue about, but when you improve certain areas, other things get improved. The value of this building is going to go up by the addition of that project. This building is being paid by and large by FEMA through other situations because of the earthquake, and the money that that we put into the project up in front is going to further enhance the value of this building, which in turn goes back into the redevelopment agency for the benefit of the community. So I don't know. I don't know how to present it in a way that people will feel not necessarily empathy for what we're trying to do, but try to understand that we're not out trying to not pay people the right wages. We're not out here saying we need money because of just we need it. You know, the idea of doing what Mr. Broadwater said about, you know, leveraging other things, I mean, that may happen. We may have to do something like that, but that's difficult. And if you talk to any investment, anybody that you talk to,
10% increase, it is a very difficult number to get your hand around. It's also, and I would restate what's been said, it doesn't mean that the employees working on this project won't be paid a prevailing wage. It just is that won't be a contractual obligation to be prevailing wages for everybody on the job. And there's a difference. It's so, and listening to the speakers, it doesn't mean people still won't be paid, for the most part, close to prevailing wages.
Okay.
It's a contractual obligation.
And then the second question, if the developer needs a loan 6 months down the line, does your recommendation that is in your report tonight change 6 months down the line, or would you still recommend that it would be a difficult for us to move forward?
Let me be first clear about the current loan. One is you can't put a loan on the property because I don't believe the construction lender will loan. As Dr. Harrison said, the construction lender to do Building A won't allow a second loan. So it's just not an option with the construction lender. So that's why it's off the table now. It also, trying to craft a loan that meets the DIR's requirement for market rate is somewhat of a gray area. But even regardless of that, the construction lender won't allow a loan. Going down the road, certainly it's an option. It's just you have to understand what that really means and what kind of security you have in the terms. I mean, again, if it's structured in a certain way, it could still trigger prevailing wages on the remaining project. It would have to, I don't know. You can't answer the question in the abstract. It certainly is a possibility.
Okay. And then Joan O'Keefe had a question. If the project is phased, does that reduce the equity requirements?
Well, I think realistically, I think Dr. Harrison mentioned it. I mean, it's not realistic in today's world to build the whole project at once now. It's just too aggressive a project. I'm not sure you can get a construction lender, let alone the equity. So the phasing is sort of the real-world dynamic here. I don't think it changes the equity requirements. It just doesn't mean you're putting in as – I don't think you can get the construction loan, let alone the equity, to do the entire project. I mean, at one point it's $50 to $60 million. That's a pretty significant project. That would be at least a $30 million construction loan. I think it's just too aggressive. But to answer the question, no, I don't think it changes the equity requirement. It's just a reflection of the financing markets and how much realistically you can build at one time.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, going down here, Eric Greening had a question. I think this is more for staff. What happened with the library situation? Wade, can you speak to that?
I don't think the library is calculated into the project at this time. There was some engineering concerns with regard to having the library on the second floor. It was significantly more expensive. And the library has a deed restriction issue at their current location. They can't really part with that property, and that has not been settled. And so they're not really looking at Colony Square at this time. They're not included in the numbers that you have before you.
Okay.
I can further elicit something there if the council so desires. The building A had to be redesigned also, which again added to Mr. Grady's prolongation of the the project. It was designed, the theater building was going to be a separate building, and the front building was going to be where the library was. What Wade said is correct. There were some issues related to seismic on the second floor. But more importantly, what happened, two things happened. For the library, the deed restriction issue came up, and that came up after they even did an appraisal on their property. So they went down the road merrily like we did to a point after they had done the appraisal, and oh, by gosh, we looked at something now, and we have problems. The other thing, John Roush and Rex Hendricks were in a partnership, and they wanted to buy the building, but that partnership dissolved, and subsequently was deemed that they did not want, or John Roush did not want to buy the building then. So it necessitated some changes, or allowed us to do changes instead of two parcels putting together, and by doing that, we effectively cut the cost down too. And I think one issue that really needs to be understood in this community is that the prevailing rental rates for new and retrofitted buildings in San Luis Obispo is $4 to $4.50 a square foot. In Paso Robles, it's $3 to $3.25 a square foot. In Atascadero, it's about $1.25. The difference is then you cannot build a mansion. I'm sorry, I'd say it different. You cannot build an architecturally significant building in Atascadero with those rents without something given. And that given is what we're talking about here. How do we get more equity into the project to make the buildings that the community wants and deserves?
Project, we've worked with them on the redesign of the theater building mid-course, and we're continuing to work with them right now on different issues, including the financing, the CCNRs, the final map. As the doctor stated, it's a very complex project. There's a lot of issues. And it has taken some time to resolve some of these issues. Has everything gone as fast and as smooth as it could? No, there's hang-ups and glitches in all projects, and some of that's always the city and some of it's always somebody else. But we remain committed to working as well as possible with the applicant to try to get this project off the ground. The theater permit has been sitting in our office ready to issue for over a year. So there are things that are ready to go that whether or not the city has it approved or not, it hasn't moved forward yet, but we remain committed to help this project as we can.
Well, thank you, Warren.
Can I make one final comment then?
Yes, quickly.
I'm sorry. We did have a commitment at $11.5 million in the building that referenced, Tim Kelly referenced the $10,075,000. That was committed to us in July and August of last year. When the credit crisis hit, they reevaluated and said we were only willing to loan, based on the same appraisal, $10 million. That created another delay in the project. All of a sudden, you're ready to go ahead, pull your permit, go ahead with it, and they say, we're going to give you $1.5 million less. That causes some consternation.
Thank you. And then several times it was brought up about buying a parcel, and we did have a closed session, and I wasn't sure if the city attorney, did we ever report out on our closed session, or is there something you would like to add?
There was nothing to report out of the closed session.
Okay.
And there's still not.
Still not. All right. So we won't talk about that. So bringing it back to the council for discussion. And why don't we just start with Jerry and go down the line to make it easier.
Okay. First of all, I think that we need to let the marketplace take care of this project. I don't feel that we should get involved at this point. I'd like to clear up the deed restriction on the library. It's my understanding if in order for them to move over into the Colony Square project, that they would have to sell that property, and there's a deed restriction. If they sold it, vacated it, went back to the Pullens or went to Stanford, or what was that, Wade?
Well, you correctly stated it as we know it today. If they no longer use the property for library purposes, it returns to the Pullen Estate, and the Pullen Estate has been given to Stanford, so Stanford would be the recipient of the library parcel.
So basically the library itself would have $0 to invest in Colony Square is what I'm hearing, or somewhere close to that.
Well, they would have $0 with respect to from that building.
From the sale, okay. And then this thing about risk, Dr. Harrison has poured his heart and soul into this project. It's, possessed him, I think, over the last 3 years, three, 4 years. And it's interesting how critical some people can be about this development and others when they have never taken a risk or never built anything. And that's just my statement.
Thank you. Well, I think our whole community agrees this is a great project. It's well designed. It's going to provide some good revenue for the city through the redevelopment agency tax increment and for sales tax. And I really hope, I think there is council support for the phasing. I think we understand changes in market condition, and I hope the Planning Commission can move that forward. I certainly agree with Councilmember Luna. I think supporting the housing in the future is something to consider because we have specialized funding to help with that, and that could help. Though I disagree with most of the speakers most of the time, I continue to disagree with some of their thoughts on the loans. However, for other reasons, I don't think loans are a good idea for the city. And I think where we are, we have to look at what's really is an economic and a financial decision for the city. I would consider purchase of property. I don't want to rule that out entirely. I use this building as a good example. I believe we've paid for this building within about 5 years because we have had a designated revenue source. FEMA's reimbursing us for the rent for not having our permanent city hall accessible. So there's a lot of creative ways of doing financing that government has access to that private sector doesn't. And I don't want to just look at property just with no reason or thought in mind. I do know that this area has been considered as one of the possible transit center sites. I don't want to put the transit center at any particular location just because like we have done with Main Street and the facade improvement program where we've gone in and helped businesses, there's been an immediate payoff, and then you're also lowering the costs and move in and start up, and you know that might be an area that has been talked about before, and I don't know if that's an option, but that might be something to consider. But those are my thoughts on the table.
Well, I'm in agreement with Council Members Clay and O'Malley that a loan, particularly now, is certainly premature. But it's very clear that in the future we will have some opportunities to continue to work with Dr. Harrison and Mr. Hilth in making this project successful. And you know, this potential option of a property purchase is certainly something we should look at. So, thank you.
I think that this project is essential for the downtown, and we have said numerous times as a unanimously that we wanted this to be a high priority as far as a project in the downtown. And so I was concerned when Joanne Main was talking about that any kind of delays may have been the responsibility of the city because we put a high priority on this. But if the permit for the theater has been available for a year, it seems to me that there's an important element of this project that could have begun quite a while ago. I think it's important to caution not only citizens but ourselves that we are in a I don't want to say collapsing economy, but it's certainly certainly not what it used to be. And we are suffering a diminished tax increment. So although it looks like we've got $2 million here, $2 million there for property acquisition, we as a board, in order to secure a $2 million grant from the state, we committed $6.5 million at our last meeting for the historic City Hall, the restoration of the historic City Hall. So not only do we have a tax increment that's falling, but also we have a expenditure out there that's looming that's enormous. And yes, we could go out for another loan, and we'll probably have to do that, but I think that every dollar that we can secure, I think we must, because this project is going to be more than, I think, the $25 million that the estimate was last year. So I concur with my colleagues here. I think we still have to hear from the board chairman, but I concur with what I've heard so far.
This is one of our items that we all agree on. Isn't that nice? I think as a community, we are all behind Dr. Harrison and Peter Hilf to get this project together. I really appreciate the report that Kaiser Marston has put together. I think it does make it very clear of what our options are. There are not a lot of options, and at this point, we really, as a city, and as I concur with my fellow board members, that we can't really participate at this time. I think the staff has worked really hard getting this project together and pushing it forward, and I'm hoping that things will come together for the developers to get this going. I do have one question for our consultant, and it was regarding a board member O'Malley's comments about tenant improvements on how to me it sounds very complicated to try to get involved in that, but I thought maybe it would be good for the council and the public to hear this. How could the council potentially get involved in loans for tenant improvements? And I'm glad you're here tonight to answer these tough questions.
Tenant improvements, I think, is going to trigger prevailing wages because you're putting money into private for-profit businesses. So there are ways to do tenant improvement loans after the project is built, but
that's what I was talking. Instead of kicking in prevailing wages on this project, it would be an issue you're actually dealing with the tenant coming in and anything that they might be doing to
tenant. But tenant improvements are so integral to leasing the property that I have a feeling the construction lender is going to want to know that that money's being funded, because if it's not funded, you can't lease the space, and if you can't lease the space, you can't pay back the construction loan. So I think that all has to be what I call in balance, earlier rather than later.
Board Member Clay, you had a question also?
Yes, not question so much, but I'd like to agree with George that, we had a gung-ho economy here, we get that 67 cents, so let's not put too much pressure on this. What I'm hearing from Dr. Harrison, they're willing to go forward, and let's let them have at it.
Thank you, Jerry. So I guess we need to give direction to staff as a board, and do we want to...
I think I saw some consensus on the phasing, the council mm-hmm. supportive of, and I think I heard from at least Board Member Brindler, myself, and maybe another person, that if staff and the developer find an opportunity on a property that there's some reason or some funding or a purpose for the city, we'd welcome that coming back. Probably have to be in a closed session, but there's, with Jim not being here tonight too, puts us a little at a disadvantage too. I know he's worked a lot on this, so I would just mm-hmm. hope if staff feel there's something for us to consider, they'll bring that back.
Okay. So does staff feel like they have enough direction, or well, Board Member Luna, did you want to add on?
Well,
to
I just wanted to interject that I think that we're all looking forward to phase one before we start, which is the theaters, basically. Before we start talking about what Councilmember Malley was talking about.
As we understand, you want to maintain this project as a top priority. We'll continue to process the project. We'll continue to look for opportunities to assist and opportunities in this project. We won't do anything more than we've already done with respect to property purchases until the project moves forward.
That sounds good. That sounds right.
I, for one, would like to see the project stand on its own 2 feet, so to speak.
I'm hopeful that we start seeing some sticks come out of the ground.
I think the whole community feels that way, so good luck, and we will move on to our next item. And I also appreciate that we could talk about this in public, so there is no sense that anything is going on that the public is not aware of. Let's see. Second management report is an update on our Wrestling Bacantes restoration, and I believe Jeff English?
Yes, Chairperson Bayrou, members of the board over here. This item is being brought back to you tonight, the request of the agency for an update on the status of the Wrestling Bacchants, the statue that previously was in the Sunken Gardens. It was created in Italy by an artist, Petrolli, who that was purchased and brought over to the World's Fair in 1904, and that was purchased by E.G. Lewis and brought to Atascadero Colony. It was located at various locations throughout Atascadero up until just a few years ago when we took it out of the Sunken Gardens for the restoration project. And in the interest of being brief, I'm going to move on to this presentation, and I think that this will move it forward. We did take the statues from Atascadero over to Cambria. There are there's a conservator in Cambria who's a well-known, very polished, if I could say, conservator who does a lot of work at Hearst Castle. We took the statue from the city on the back of a truck and hauled it over to Cambria. We were very careful to prevent any cracking. We did take limbs off prior to moving it to Cambria so that some of those limbs that were actually broken off previously and part of previous restoration efforts would not crack again. Again, we loaded on the back of a semi and hauled it over to Cambria using a local contractor who is very capable at this kind of work. And we arrived over in Cambria. We took this to the studios in Cambria of the conservator, and they have a shop there in Cambria where the piece is placed now. Here is a picture of, I don't remember the pronunciation of his name, Strafko Baroff, who is one of the partners with Ethos, the company that we contracted with for the conservation. We contracted with this company about a year ago, and they have told us that they are on track with this project, and they are working on it. It's painstaking work, but they're working on it and progressing rapidly as they can. This photo shows a good representation of a portion of the statue that has been restored and a portion of the statue that has not been restored. The years of the girls sitting out in the Sunken Gardens in the weather really wore on them. There was a lot of dirt, grime, and microbial. The cleaning process is completed. This is a portion of one of the heads of one of the Bacchants who has been completely cleaned. And it's very impressive to see in person. The statue is just sparkling when it's been cleaned. And they'll have that entire process done within the time that they had anticipated, which should be April of 2009. You can see on this statue that one of the nose has been altered a little bit. That was a previous restoration, and the nose will be repaired as well. This is another one of the maidens that has not yet been cleaned, so you can see there's a stark difference. There's another slide, the other side of the statue that has been repaired. This is Steve Kahn with Public Works Director with Constance Faber, one of the partners in Strafko, the two partners in Ethos. Again, a full view. There is a rod in the lower left-hand corner here that was completely rusted and the leg had to be removed, and that rod is being replaced. This is Steve Kahn inspecting the work. We have been very concerned about this, and we go check on it periodically just to make sure the work is progressing. This is the base of the statue, and that has not yet been cleaned. The girls were egged on a number of occasions, and so there are some debris of eggs and buildup of other substances on the statue. This is a little difficult to see, but this is a hand, and right in this area, and my laser's not working, but the hand, many of the digits on the hand are broken off, and those will all be replaced and repaired. Again, metal pins have been removed, and those pins will be cleaned and replaced and restored. All the restorations, previous restorations, will be replaced or taken off, cleaned, and then restored. Here you can see an example of where a limb was previously reattached. We are taking that off. The conservator is taking it off, cleaning it, and then we'll reattach it. Here's another sample of that kind of work. Some of the fingers had old restorations. They were removed, and in some cases, those will be restored and replaced. In some cases, the sculptor, the conservators will completely restore, design a new piece and install a new piece where the old restoration was not correct. Some examples of in the bottom right-hand corner where things were thrown at the statue, rocks or bottles or other debris was thrown at the statue, and it's just some of the abuse that they took while they were outside. This is a last picture, just a good angle of the statue, location where the statue has been completely restored, and it really is startling when you see them completely cleaned and completely restored. We're encouraged by this, the progress that they're making, and they are on schedule, and we do anticipate that they will be returned to Atascadero in April 2009. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you for your report. It is impressive. Any questions? Board Member Clay.
Yeah. Jeff, a lot of people don't know what the material that the statue is made out of, and also are the parts that... replacement parts, are they going to be that same material or cement, or what's going to be?
I do know that the piece was at one point a full block of marble. I'm not sure if that was a Carrara marble, as people have mentioned before, but it was one complete block of marble. The pieces will be sculpted of a similar marble.
Oh, that's
obviously
great.
They
that's
can't
great.
Get the exact same material, but something similar.
Very good, very good.
Seeing no further questions, we'll open it up to the public comment.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I'm delighted to see this moving forward on schedule. Certainly, I hope that we continue to increase our public art, and I think we will have the confidence of artists if we show that we're taking care of our old public art, and we'll continue that responsibility through the centuries. The question, obviously, now before us, given that April of next year is only 11 months away, is when are we going to begin the planning process for where these wonderful maidens will live on their return? They should not be out under the open sky. They should be in a place where people won't be throwing eggs or bottles, but they should be in a place where they are seen. Perhaps ultimately, once it's repaired, they can live in our restored city hall. But obviously,
yeah, I don't think we should just set our sights on City Hall for this piece, because for one thing, it's only open a certain period of time, and I think that it should be in an area that that it can be seen by people on the weekends and so on. And you know, I'm going to plant the seed of building a gazebo that it would fit in, that would be out of the weather and be protected, and it would be there where people could see it 24/7, 7 days a week.
Jeff, do you want to give us an update of what the plans are for planning for this?
Yeah, I'll defer to the city manager.
Okay. Wait.
Thank you. Actually, it's still on your list of projects to do. We want you to set some parameters with respect to cost and location before we just set anybody loose. We've spent $250,000 on the statue that we hadn't budgeted any for. We originally started at $250,000, so it will take some substantial funding to put them in an appropriate house, as we learned in our original study. So we're going to need to come back and get some parameters before we move ahead on that project.
So we needed to agendize this for further council direction?
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay. Do you want to see if we have consensus to do that tonight, or do you want to...
You can give us direction to agendize. We're looking at later in the summer.
If I could suggest, maybe it's strategic planning.
That's a good idea.
Strategic planning session agenda.
Any other comments about that?
Well, I'm just wondering if that may be too far off. I agree with Mr. Greening. This is going to be coming back to our city pretty soon, and it's going to take some shoot. It might take us that long for a permit. I don't know. But we're going to need to have some structure for this to go. And as I understand, whatever cost is, we're going to have to take the money from some other existing project, as we all agreed to do. So I would want to allow enough time. Usually the strategic plan doesn't happen until November-ish or so.
What is the next plan date for strategic planning?
We do not have a scheduled date. We usually have one mid-year.
But I don't think there was a plan this year.
We have diverted our strategic planning efforts to the public trust effort.
Right.
And that's also where our money has gone from strategic planning to this as well. So that's another cost. I would suggest we keep it at a regular council meeting and just bring it back as staff suggested.
Well, Board Member Clay.
Sure. If that's the case, certainly we can agendize it. It doesn't have to be like tomorrow. And I think that getting the Recreation Commission involved, maybe we give them some direction or something like that and get them involved and let them come forward with something that would be appropriate.
Board Member Brenler?
But we will assure for the protection of that piece of property before during that transitionary period?
Yes.
Well, I think we should agendize it before strategic planning since we don't know when that's going to be. So it sounds like you have direction to bring it back this summer? Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So that closes our management reports. Any board announcements or reports? Seeing none? Anybody? No? I'll go ahead and adjourn. And should we take a five-minute break, or do you want to move right to the – we'll take a five-minute break, and then we'll continue with the city council meeting.
Return to their seats. We can reconvene our meeting. All right, welcome to our regularly scheduled council meeting. And for those of you who would like to have a copy of our agenda, those are available at the back of the room. For those of you who are listening or watching by means of cable television or the internet or listening on the radio, you can access a copy of the agenda by visiting our Atascadero website, atascadero.org. So tonight we'll begin our meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance, which is led by Mayor Pro Tem Ellen Vero.
Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. Marcia, can we have the roll call, please?
Yes. Councilmember Luna.
Here.
Ryan Carden has been serving as a student representative on our Parks and Recreation Commission since 2006. And in that capacity, he has shown himself to be insightful and articulate and very committed. It's quite apparent that there is no challenge that can't be tackled. In addition to his commission service, Ryan has his pilot's license, he's an Eagle Scout, he's a black belt in martial arts, he was recently honored as a top 30 student in the high school, and to exemplify his community service, he undertook the construction of the gazebo at the Lake Park. And although Ryan leaves our Parks and Recreation Commission, he continues his commitment to excellence. Ryan is entering the Air Force Academy this fall. And the Air Force Academy has basic core values: integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. And Ryan, you've made a good choice for your education. And so on behalf of the city of Atascadero, we thank you for your commitment to us. And please come and take this token of our appreciation. Ryan, would you like to have an opportunity to say a few words? We'd certainly like to hear them.
I wanted to thank you guys for this award. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciated the opportunity to serve as a representative on the Parks and Rec Commission. Learned a lot about how everything's run in the city, and I'll use that knowledge in the future. Being in the Air Force, a big part of that is serving in the community, and my opportunity to serve on the Parks and Recreation Commission has kind of helped me with that. So I want to thank you guys again for that, and I really appreciate all the kind words you just said about me. Thank you.
Thank you again, Ryan. I know Councilmember O'Malley would like to say a few words as well.
Well, you covered a lot, I think, with the Academy especially. I know you had to choose between Naval Academy and Air Force Academy. Getting accepted to any of the academies is a real honor, and you represent our community well. I did want to warn you, I know you already got a haircut some, but you're going to get another haircut. Yeah. But thank you for representing our community so proudly, and we wish you the best of luck at the Academy.
Thank you.
All right, we will move on to our consent calendar. There are a total of 7 items. Is there anyone? I'm sorry, do we need approval first, do we not?
I think we did that, didn't we?
We did the agenda.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Then we will. I will ask for anybody from the community if they wish to pull an item.
6, please.
Number 6. Anyone else? Anyone from the council who wishes to pull an item?
Move approval of the remainder consent calendar items.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember O'Malley, a second by Councilmember Clay. Roll call.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Luna?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bureau?
Yes.
Mayor Brenler?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. All right, item 6, the temporary road closure, Hot El Camino Cruise Night 2008. Mr. Greening?
Push. There we go. Okay, now it's on. Thank you. Again, I am Eric Greening, and I do urge you to approve this. This is always quite an amazing event. Even though I'm not a driver, it certainly is an exciting thing, to see the community come together musically as well as all the other aspects of it. Anyway, my concern is to make sure that you recognize when you're doing the traffic diversions and so on that part of the public that is very much affected by this is transit users, and they need a lot of...
Address some of these issues?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Then
move approval of consent calendar item number...
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember O'Malley, a second by Councilmember Clay. Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Luna?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bureau?
Yes.
Mayor Brenler?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. All right, we will now move on to our community forum, and where the public has an opportunity to speak on issues that are not on the agenda. And remember that your allotted time is 3 minutes, and please allow me to make some additional comments. Last week during a public workshop, a couple of folks chose to push the envelope of civility and engage in some name-calling and what I perceive as slander. And this behavior is not appropriate, and it can't be. It's not acceptable, and it will be dealt with. You're encouraged to speak. You're encouraged to speak passionately. Complaint and criticism are completely as acceptable so long as you don't stray over that line. And we all know what that line is. And to the council, I will remind everyone to please allow the public to finish their thoughts and their comments without interruption or argument. And although brief questioning or clarification or even comments of support, those are acceptable. But if we and if we take exception to something the public has said, we're certainly permitted to speak to the issue, provided we can be relatively brief. With that said, we'll begin our public comment. And welcome, Mr. Ward.
Thank you. Excuse me. Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, neighbors, my name is Chuck Ward, and I'm a resident here in Atascadero, and I'm also a very proud board member of the Atascadero Veterans Memorial Foundation. I'm here tonight because I feel, in keeping with the spirit of this Memorial Day, I thought it would be appropriate for us to reflect for a few moments on our county's fallen heroes, men and women whose names are sometimes forgotten, but I think they should be long remembered. And this is what this Veterans Memorial we're building is all about. One of the key elements of this memorial is a 70-foot semicircular wall of heroes. It consists of 9 large, inch-and-a-quarter thick black granite panels. The same panels, the same granite that you have in the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. On each of these panels representing World War I, several for World War II, Korea, Vietnam, will be written a history, a brief history of the conflict. And under each panel will be forever engraved in that black granite over 205 names of brave men and women from our county, many from the city, who have died in World War I to the present. Now, who were these brave Marines, sailors, airmen, Coast Guardmen? Well, 13 of them were born over 100 years ago, and I'm sure they served very bravely in World War I. Others were our neighbors, our loved ones. They grew up here. They went to school here. And when a nation called, they put on their uniform and they went to war and they never came home. They will never get to sit in the bleachers and watch their son's Little League game. They will never see their daughter's first prom dress. And they will never get to play with their grandchildren or take pictures at their birthday parties, as we all have. It is therefore appropriate that this world-class Veterans Memorial will be built here in this colony city, town of Atascadero. And if old E.G. Lewis were alive today and down here, I'm sure that he would be very, very proud of what we are doing.
Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Hello, Heather.
Good evening. I'm Maps Information Around Town, and we hope you all come out and support us. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. A great endeavor, and hopefully everyone will come out and turn out for this. Mr. Broadwater, welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and council members. My name is David Broadwater. I came here to speak on, after having attended a meeting here in these chambers this last Thursday, went all day long, that was called Building Public Trust, or about campaign ethics, community ethics. And a couple things about that I wanted to talk about. Number one, we have a couple city council members, as you know, who are repeatedly making allegations that have so far been unsubstantiated, that a couple of organizations in this town are functioning as illegal political action committees, namely the Homeowners Association and Oppose Walmart. Yet not once in the years that I've been watching city council meetings, et cetera, have I ever seen one shred of evidence to substantiate those allegations. So I'm asking that from now on, when those allegations are made against any citizen organizations who are using their First Amendment rights to speak, assemble, and petition the government, that when those allegations are made, that they be supported with and be required to be supported with evidence. I'm tired of listening to unsupported allegations. Finally, I would like to report, and some of you were there and witnessed, that one member of our city council threatened another member with physical violence. Mr. O'Malley challenged Mr. Brendler to meet him out in the parking lot. This kind of behavior is as repulsive as it is repugnant and reprehensible. That is conduct unbecoming of any public official in this town. I witnessed it. I know a number of you did, and other people did. And I think that it's incumbent upon every member of this city council to take some kind of concrete action in terms of a letter of either censure, reprimand, or guidance to show in a concrete manner that that kind of behavior, threatening another public official at a public meeting with physical violence, will never be tolerated at all in this town. And finally, I would like to say, I heard during the redevelopment agency meeting that we just had in these chambers, a council member Clay say that there are some people that had spoken on the issues during that meeting who have never built anything or never taken any risks. And I would like Mr. Clay to be challenged to identify who those people are that he says have never built anything or taken any risk. But I urge you emphatically to take some concrete action tonight about the threat of physical violence that you know took place this last Thursday. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor, council people, staff, and attendees. I'm Tom Komar, spokesperson for the locally organized and funded community group Oppose Walmart. I'm spokesperson for our registered ballot committee, the Tascadero Shield Initiative Committee. I attended also last Thursday's public workshop on building public trust and ethics. And it became quite obvious that Tom O'Malley and Jerry Clay and a small group of politicos were determined to disrupt that process. This group took advantage of public input to launch disrespectful attacks on the mayor and on other council persons with whom they disagree politically. Unfortunately, the session was not taped for the community to see. But everyone present heard Tom O'Malley threaten Mike to step out in the parking lot. This is outrageous, and I believe the council and the city attorney, who was present also and heard it, must take action this time. As well, both Tom and Jerry continue to make unfounded accusations about Oppose Walmart. Without a shred of evidence being offered, you persist to claim that Oppose Walmart was an illegal, unregistered political action committee. Apparently, it's your only recourse to explain the results of the last election, that somehow it wasn't the people who voted for the candidates, but opposed Walmart's political activity. This mailer, and this is the one you referred to at that workshop, and our balloons that we had at Colony Day, were the extent of our political activity that was counted by the Fair Practices Political Commission. This is our fancy, glossy mailer that we sent out to a very few voters. We did not qualify as a political action committee. We didn't spend $1,000, and if we had, we would have registered. Currently, our 460 form, reporting form for the Shield Committee, is on public record. If you'll check that out, you will see that both Oppose Walmart and the Shield Committee is on a shoestring, is local, and it's funded.
At the last council meeting, and I was surprised to hear that a councilman proposed that we change the way that we select our mayor. It has been my impression that the council over the last couple of years has had so many issues to deal with that we've had to reduce the public comment period in community forum by 2 minutes per individual. As recently as the last council meeting, it was acknowledged that the staff was being asked to do more with less. Up until this point, there has been a lack of public concern over this issue, as seen in the community forum in the past. I haven't seen this issue as a burning issue with the public. Over the last 3 months, I've approached approximately over 1,000 Tascadero citizens. And I've had conversations with many hundreds of citizens, and we talked about issues that they were concerned about in Atascadero. And not one person spoke to me about the need for changing the way that the mayor was selected. That wasn't a burning issue with the people that I talked to. The council has more than enough to accomplish doing the public business. And I would agree with one of the councilman's favored statements that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Joan.
Thank you. I'm Joan O'Keefe. I made a point of going to the second public trust and campaign finance reform meeting on Thursday because I'd heard how awful the first meeting was, and I was hoping that if more people were present, it might improve. This meeting didn't improve. UncoveredSlow.com wrote a short article, and their headline reads, "O'Malley Threatens Mayor with Alley Brawl." The article goes on to describe what happened when the mayor tried to stop Councilman O'Malley from interrupting the speaker. I won't embarrass you by going into any more details. The public can read the article online at UncoveredSlow.com. It has generated a lot of comment from the public. Please, if you don't want the third meeting, if there's going to be a third meeting to denigrate into another brawl, be sure the meeting is more structured and someone is clearly in charge. I can't emphasize this enough, and that the agenda be geared to the capabilities of the participants. This group, in my opinion, cannot deal with process as the facilitator attempted to do. It always ends up being about individuals. At the end of the morning, Councilman O'Malley summarized his feelings by saying, "This morning was wasted on minutiae." Dr. Shanks tried to salvage the session by pointing out that one thing had been accomplished, but I can't recall what it was because of all the divisiveness and negativity. I had called and asked the mayor if the meeting couldn't be audio taped. His request was denied. Because of the setup, all the participants should have access to microphones. Councilpersons couldn't hear councilpersons, and the audience couldn't hear all of you. With that said, I thought some positive suggestions did come out of the afternoon meeting. Now, last time I spoke to you at the last city council meeting, it was about the printry. At that meeting, I asked who owned the printry and who was in charge of making sure the deed restrictions were enforced. I did not get an answer. I would like an answer. If the answer is the city is responsible, then I would like to hear from the city attorney how these deed restrictions can be enforced. And I am aware that Mr. Gerhardt was sent a registered letter May 14th informing him that building plans need to be submitted by June 18th. Do you have a contingency plan if he doesn't, or will you just keep sending him more letters? Again, who owns the printry and who is in charge of enforcing the deed restrictions, specifically the one about keeping the building in good condition? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Greening?
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and I have a transportation issue I was planning to spend 3 minutes on. Having heard these eyewitness accounts of what happened last Thursday where I was not present, obviously not being present, I can't say anything about the meeting, but if those accounts are accurate, certainly censure and some kind of binding commitment to civility is in order. I am very troubled by the fact that there apparently is no record of that meeting, so that we have to depend on eyewitness accounts. And I wonder how you can possibly do the public's business without the public having a record it can access about your business. I would also hope that if you had a firm, ironclad policy of not doing the public's business unless you're in closed session without videotape or audio tape or both as a record for the public, for the whole public of its funding. In the January 2008 proposal, the Slo County Transit Systems collectively were to receive $3 million. In the May revise, it has been sliced to $1.3 million. Basically, that money is all programmed and then some. In other words, once again, a governor who would like to pass as green is trying to balance a budget on the backs of the people who are part of the green solution, namely those who use transit and don't own cars or leave their cars at home. This is not acceptable. It will hurt our own transit efforts quite severely, and we're talking about the spillover account. As the price of fuel goes up, transit agencies have higher fuel bills and more demand for their services. So please attend to that, and again, please attend to the issue of never again meeting without a recorded record. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello again, Lee Perkins, Atascadero. And I, too, am following up on the concerns I voiced at the last city council meeting about the Pernery. Who is responsible for its preservation, and to ask what concrete steps are planned to preserve this historic landmark in our midst? At the last city council meeting, I asked about the stop sign installation at the west side of the Cooperall overpass. I understand that it is in the works but planned for summer. I ask again if this installation could be expedited due to the delays drivers experienced coming off of the 101 exit at Cooperall. In my goal to highlight the positives of the city of Atascadero, I would like to call attention to the civic lesson the Oppose Walmart issue has stimulated in and around our county. Oppose Walmart has had numerous calls from Cal Poly and Cuesta students who are doing research papers for the classes on the pros and cons of Walmart. This has been ongoing over the last 2 years, including several classes at Atascadero High School and the Continuation School examining the issues, and recently we had a call and emails from students from Templeton High School. A number of teachers and many students have seized the opportunity to take a look at an issue in their community, a civic issue controversy, and how it has, is, and could affect Atascadero and its neighbors. There is actually a college curriculum available, Walmart, a college curriculum, the world's largest company, and its impact available for students. I would also like to give a bravo to Heather Curry for facilitating and organizing the first annual art walk here in Atascadero. Friday night, we will be looking forward to the event that will not only highlight the art in our community, but the emerging downtown. It's amazing what one person can do. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Welcome, Joanne.
Good evening, Council. I just wanted to remind everyone on Thursday, June 5th, the City of Atascadero, PG&E, and the Chamber will be presenting the annual economic forecast on Atascadero. And that's brought to you in large part by PG&E's contributions and the City's contribution, as well as the UCSB Economic Forecast Executive Director Bill Watkins will be the main speaker that day. Along with Bill, he'll be, reviewing trends that have been happening in our city. We also will have Pete Dankin, a local realtor, that will be talking about the real estate impacts in the North County that we're all seeing. We also have Steve Harding, who is with Rabobank, which will be talking about banking and what's happening in that future. And we also have our very own Steve Martin, who will be talking about our Main Street and the economic engine of our downtown, as well as tourism. So I urge folks to call the chamber for reservations. The ticket price is $40. It's Thursday, June 5th from 7:30 in the morning to 11 a.m. at the Pavilion on the Lake. And reservations are required. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Roberta.
Thank you. Roberta Fonzi, Atascadero resident. I just wanted to speak about the election of a mayor and the possibility. I know that this was voted on at the last council meeting. I was disappointed with the vote. My thoughts on this are that public input is very important. It hasn't been fully vetted by the public. It's a topic that was just brought up. It's something new on our radar. It's not something that people necessarily have given a lot of thought to, but I think there were some good points made about continuity on certain county boards that involve cities throughout the county. We are the only city without an elected mayor. And in agencies such as SLOCOG, having someone that is in a recurring position on SLOCOG may be beneficial to the city. I would urge you to, again, reconsider this, bring it back to the residents. We'd like to have our input and have some more information on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello. My name is John Elias Dennis, and I just have a really brief note. This has to do with our community and the hotel that's being built right at that stop sign that everyone...
Actually, this is probably best addressed by the city attorney, Mr. Was Joe... Joan raised the issue of deed restrictions. Mr. Pyrick, and I don't... Are you prepared to...
Is that referring to Prenum, or what's the topic on the deed restriction?
Mr. Mayor, perhaps we could respond again to the Prenum update issues in a memo form and get that back to the City Council. It'll be available to the public, and we'll include those two answers, who the owner of the Prenum and what the issue with the deed restrictions is.
And that'll be provided?
To the Council and public.
All right. Thank you. And we had an issue that was brought up by Mr. Greening, referenced transportation issues. And I'm assuming that this is something that the council can certainly address, our representatives in Sam Blakesley's office and Abel Maldonado and SLOCOG. And I encourage you, Mr. Greening, and I know you will, to raise those issues with those folks as well. But your comments are understood. There was a... an issue dealing with this past workshop and some the events that occurred there. And, you know, sometimes people say things in frustration, and I certainly am willing to forgive, but I certainly hope that something like that does never happens again. It doesn't reflect good in our community, and should something like that happen again, then I guess we'll have to deal with it as a council. But I'm hoping that it doesn't. So I think that's enough said on that topic. And we had a question. Wade referenced the trash buildup over by, I think it was on near Portola there.
I made a note. We'll follow up on that.
Okay. Please do. And I think that... Oh, Tom, did you have a comment you would like to make?
No. Yes. Well, I'll go ahead first. And I would certainly agree with David Broadwater on a point that I brought up at our first strategic planning session about a year and a half ago and have brought up again since, is my frustration with Thursday morning is my central goal was to work on a process where we can have unsupported allegations reviewed in a formal way by whether it's a council member or a member of the public, that there's a clear process where concerns are brought forward, they're researched, and they're responded to. This is one of the areas that Alan Barrow and I are working on a committee on the campaign that's be morphed into a public trust. There were a number of events that took place. I'm not going to get into redefining them. I think it was not reported very accurately, but rather than doing a he said, she said, there was a lot of behavior at that meeting that was not reported, and I think, I don't know that this is the time to review that. I think it would be very helpful at our next workshop, if we have with consultant. We look at some of the behaviors that were exhibited and words said at the last meeting, and I think that's the place to work through that. But I certainly support a process where we look at allegations in a way that is open to the public, and then everyone can have some input to that and also hear the outcome, reporting back. What is the outcome of that research? So I think we're on track with doing that still. And I don't know if anyone else would like to add to that.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes. first of all, I'm sorry that Chuck Ward left because he had a good message. And Tom and I attended the Memorial Day ceremonies at the cemetery Monday. And what was interesting is I've been going for at least the last 10 years, and in the past, going back that far, maybe we'd have 25 or 30 people, and there was at least 250 folks there yesterday, and it was really gratifying to see the numbers, how they picked up. And I would encourage anybody that hasn't gone to the Memorial Day ceremonies at the seminary to try to attend. And Alfonsi was the speaker. He did an outstanding job. Sometimes you just don't know your people that are in the community. You don't realize that he's had 37 years of service to our country and so on. And some of the stories that he told were just tear-jerking type stories and wonderful. And I wish Chuck was here because we're still running a little short, and the sales of these bricks are very important. It's $100 for a brick, and it goes in the walkway, and you can put anything. It doesn't have to be a veteran or whatever. The hatches, the phone numbers, at some point we probably need to do it.
And as related to that, that is on the plate of the city attorney to come back with something as far as the election of mayor. And there's, obviously there's a lot of other components than just the election of the mayor that deal with the mayor pro tem, how that's selected, and a host of other issues. So it's very important that we do it, we get it right when we do it. And I'm sorry, Mayor Pro Tem Barreau, you had a comment?
Regarding the lack of recording of that meeting, it was the recommendation of the consultant to allow a more free exchange of ideas, not to record. I think we have reconsidered that position, and we'll take another look at that before we have another meeting. Since Thursday, the Public Trust Committee has not met and kind of gone over everything that we covered that day, so we're not going to really have a formal report, to present tonight, but we might touch on it and just give feedback from council members at council announcements and reports.
All right, and I want to go on the record as saying that I think it should be recorded. I think it's very important, particularly in view of what happened. And are there any other comments? Councilmember Luna?
I'll weigh in. I almost didn't go to the Thursday session because of what happened at the previous session. And unless there is some kind of structure, recording, TV, some way to make sure that people are on the record, televising meetings is an excellent way to make people behave themselves. And they don't do it naturally, that's for sure, as was evidenced last Thursday. So I need to see a heck of a lot more structure. I don't want to be a participant in what I thought was the most disastrous meeting we've ever had, which is the meeting previous to the one last Thursday. And the one last Thursday was awful.
That includes you too, right, George?
Councilmember Clay?
See, that includes you too, right?
No, don't argue. Just if you have some comments, please. Seeing none?
I do have my light on again.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. And, I'm going to avoid, I think those that were there were many folks there, observed a number of behaviors by a number of council members. There could be other folks who could get up and say other things. I think we all had agreed, I certainly agreed, that I was concerned about not having it televised. I think there's some value in being able to play back videotape sometimes for our own benefit. And I think that's something Ellen and I will talk about, and we may even want to look at other consulting options. I think we all agreed that was not a well-structured meeting, and there were some problems with that. But I think Ellen and I are going to meet again and review this process and come back with some recommendations for where we go from here.
And that sounds good. So are we prepared to move on to our public hearings? All right, we will do so. We have three public hearings. They all deal with the assessment districts. They'll all be presented by Rochelle Rickard, the Administrative Services Director. The first one is item B1, Apple Valley Assessment Districts.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council Members. The items you have before you, and I'm going to group them all as three to begin with, and then we'll separate them out, are for the assessment districts. Now, these are extra assessments that are placed on certain parcels within the city. It is not a general tax. It is only for those developments where we have set up landscape and lighting or benefit assessment districts to help maintain the roads in the common areas within the district. There are three areas within the city that have these types of districts. One is Apple Valley, as he just stated, Mr. Mayor just stated. One is De Anza, and the other is Woodridge Las Lomas project. The process we're going through tonight is that the levies must be adopted annually, and that's the process we're doing tonight. It's a two-step process. We did the first step on April 22nd, 2008, and tonight we're going to hold public hearings, approve the final engineer's annual levy reports, and order the levy and a collection of annual taxes or assessments. We do have Nadia and friend here from Uni Financial, and they'll be able to help answer any questions. It's Nadia and Adina, sorry. The first assessment district we have before you is Apple Valley. This is a development off of Del Rio Road. For the landscape and lighting districts, they do have excess funds in the district. We held a neighborhood meeting to discuss how to handle those excess funds. The neighbors were in favor of doing an assessment that's 60% of the allowable maximum assessment. And for the landscape and lighting district, for the street and storm drain district, it's almost the meadow right behind Home Depot there. There's a subdivision there, including the senior housing. In the landscape and lighting district, again, there are some excess funds. We held a neighborhood meeting where we discussed what to do with the excess fund. In this neighborhood, there was some dissent about how to do that, but at the April 22nd meeting, we decided to go ahead and assess 50% of allowable maximum assessment for the landscape and lighting district. The street and storm drain district is going to be assessed at approximately 97% of the maximum allowable assessment. And staff recommends that you adopt resolutions A through D for De Anza Estates.
Thank you. Questions from the council? Seeing none, we'll open it to the public. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to item 2, De Anza State Assessment Districts? Appears we have one. Welcome.
Hello. I'm John Elias Dennis, and I was in that area walking the paths that were part of that development. And I wondered, have they been dedicated? Are those paths part of what this assessment goes to pay? There were a number of areas that the path dead-ended and that weren't being kept clear of debris on the asphalt portion of the trail. So I have a question on whether the path in that area has been dedicated and if these are going to help with the trails in that area as part of that landscaping. That's my question.
Thank you. Warren, are you able to answer that?
Yes, those trails have been accepted, and that's what we're collecting the fees for is the maintenance. We'll look into any debris or areas that are not passable.
I posed the question to you, Wade, last week about that issue dealt with the weeds, and apparently that's been resolved. that were on the trail?
That's correct. Public Works had indicated and provided pictures that they had walked the trails, and they were the trails that are covered in the district are in good shape.
Okay, terrific. Thank you.
Can I say that this was the part that was, if there's the bridge and you're facing the bridge to leave that development, there's the asphalt trail is to the left that goes along the creek, and that was covered with debris. So it's meant to be a biking trail or roller stroller, I guess. It's hard surface, and that was covered with branches and things like that.
All right, thank you. Well, maybe we can get somebody out, take a peek at that, and try to resolve it if it is a problem. Thanks again. All right, is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak to this issue? Seeing none, return it to the council.
I move the staff recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Luna, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Luna?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou?
Yes.
Mayor Brendler?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to, bless you, we'll move on to our last public hearing, item B3, Woodridge Las Lomas Assessment Districts. Rochelle?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council Member. The last assessment district you have before you are the Las Lomas, or originally known as Woodridge Assessment Districts. In the Landscape and Lighting District, they too have excess funds. We did hold a neighborhood meeting. The neighbors decided that a 50% assessment would work best for them, and therefore that's what the engineer's report shows. And on the street and storm drain, the maximum tax increased 3%. And because we have not accepted all of those improvements, the residents wanted a small assessment of around 32%, which will fit with their funding plan. With that, staff recommends adopting resolutions A through D for Las Lomas.
Just one question.
Thank you. We have questions from council.
So
council
is the 32%, is that mean that the project is 32% completed? Or?
It was more that they wanted a nominal assessment so that it reminds everybody that there are assessments there. Those funds do not disappear. They do build up over time. Some of the improvements that are there are deteriorating slightly over time, and so that was the level that they felt, okay, well, we'll put that aside. The developers are going to do a final slurry seal and some finishing before the city accepts it. So it was kind of a compromise as we talked about what the cost would be in there.
Thank you.
Are there other questions from council? Seeing none, we'll open to the public. Anyone wishing to speak on this item?
Hello. Yes. My name is John Elias Dennis, and I was out looking at that area today, and we're thankful as a member of the public to have paths to walk on in this community, do more work on the trail, or if the public can expect anything more to be done to improve those.
Do you want to know the standards? Is that what I understand you to?
Yeah, if you're calling it good, we should know the difference between that type of trail and what we're doing at RCD so we have a benchmark when we talk about the upcoming project today.
All right, thank you. Warren, are you in a position to answer?
I'll do my best. Those trails that we're speaking of at Las Lomas are intended to be natural footpath type trails, so they don't meet our standards for accessibility that you find on sidewalks or other public ways. These trails have been installed by the California Conservation Corps, so it meets their typical standards. I've been out there a couple times with Public Works. Jeff English has worked with them on making sure the trails are well designed and don't have any erosion problems or impassability issues. We haven't accepted them yet. I know last time I was out there, Jeff English did produce a punch list of items that needed to be taken care of before we would accept them.
All right, thank you. Let me close comment. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak on this particular issue? Seeing none, we'll return it to council. And Council Member O'Malley, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Well, first I want to compliment our Parks and Recreation Commissioner because she said she was really going to champion trails, and you certainly have. And I think it raises one good question that maybe I'm just unfamiliar with, but it sounds like when we talk about trails, there's a wide range in people's minds. And I think there actually are a couple of different definitions, like if the Conservation Corps does a trail, or like there's some other organizations doing trails, and it sounds like they kind of have a standard. And I'm even wondering, just for information's sake, is there a list we could get that says these are different? I agree with what they're doing, because some places you really want it to be as natural as possible. It's just a designated area. But is that possible to get some definitions of the different types of trails that are in existence and what is expected of persons when we are talking about trails?
We could get the council some information on different, I guess, standards that are in the industry for trails.
Yes.
One of the common ones is the Class 1 bike path, which is the 8-foot paved pathway. That's a Caltrans standard. City of Atascadero, we do not have a uniform adopted standard for a trail. We are working on public work standards that could be included in those. And then as we get into more natural trails, there's various different standards, I think, that different park services may maintain. So let's put a little work into that. We can report back, and possibly as part of the public works standards update, we could get a good trail or a variety of trail standards incorporated in that.
Maybe we could just, as a report back, what are the definitions out there?
And
Will that be very labor-intensive for you to do, Warren? I know you have a lot on the plate.
I'm just going to give it to Dave Athey, so it'll be no work for me.
Okay. We'll appreciate that. Well, Councilmember Luna,
I think it would
question?
Be appropriate to run it by Parks and Rec. They're in charge of trails, and so giving them a copy of the list of potential kinds of trails that could be put in, we'd all have a better understanding of what we're actually going to get.
So maybe we'll put together just a quick briefing memo for the council and the commission, and then you can give us direction in terms of any additional work you'd like to see done.
Right. All I was asking for is existing definitions. I wasn't asking for anything new to be created. We could look at that down the road. Right.
Well, I think we have given Warren some direction, and I think naturally sending this to Parks and Rec is a great idea. So, do we have any other questions? Seeing none, we'll entertain a motion.
Move approval of staff recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember O'Malley, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou. Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Yes.
Councilmember Luna.
Yes.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou.
Yes.
Mayor Brendler.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you, Marcia. All right, we will now move on to our management reports. Our first report, staff authorization to process general plan amendment and annexation application, Eagle Ranch specific plan, and that will be presented by Warren Frace, our community development director.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. This item before us tonight is a request from staff for authorization to process a fairly significant general plan amendment application. The city council has a policy that requires the council to provide authorization before the city staff begins working on general plan amendments. The general plan is basically your blueprint for the future of the city. It's up to the city council to decide when it's appropriate to change that. That's why we ask the council that question before we start spending staff time and resources on amending the general plan. So the project that's out there, although none of that's been developed, this area was subdivided as part of the original Atascadero colony. So there's a series of paper roads and lots that are the same types of lots that the rest of Atascadero is built on. It's also an area served by the Atascadero Mutual Water Company, so it does have entitlements for water service. Here's an aerial photo of the site. You can see here's Highway 101 here. The Santa Barbara Road interchange is located here. Here's Highway 41 running along this side here. San Rafael Road runs right about here, and Atascadero Avenue is here. From the aerial photo, you can see it's a large open area with lots of coverage of native oak woodlands. There's also some flatter plains that are open as well. There's a lake that's located in the back of the site. So just a summary of the site, like I mentioned, it's 3,450 acres. There's 452 Atascadero colony lots that exist within the ranch area. So there's already 452 lots that could be built either within the city or the county. It's the goal of the city and our policy to bring that into the city for annexation before any of that development occurs. Sites characterized by a lot of sloping terrain, very steep mountainous areas, oak-covered hills. It's also the headwaters to Atascadero Creek, so Atascadero Creek originates in the Eagle Ranch. One of the things that you'll notice before you tonight and as part of this presentation is there is no plan yet. This project is big enough and complicated enough that the applicant and staff have agreed that it's premature to produce a land use plan for the council to even consider at this point. What we're asking for tonight from the council is permission to move forward with a process that will begin the process of developing plans and concepts for the site. We believe it's very important that the public, the city council, the planning commission, the Parks and Recreation Commission all have input early in this process to help shape this plan. 3,400-acre annexation, this will be the largest annexation in the history of the city. This is a very significant project. We believe it's very important to have lots of public input and buy-in to this project before we get too set on one land use development concept or another. So as I mentioned, what we're going to be talking about starting is the planning process where we could work with the public and the councils and commissions to develop the series of alternatives for this site. Eventually, we'll come back to the city council and ask you to select a preferred plan and initiate an EIR on the project, but that's further down the road. Just a couple quick shots or photos of what the site looks like. This is one of the areas where you can see kind of the rolling terrain, some of the flat areas, and some of the oak-covered hillsides. This is a view from one of the higher points on the ranch where you can see the long vistas that are available. You can also see the steep mountainous terrains, some of the dense wood-covered areas. There's old ranching facilities that are located on the top of the site. This is one of the old show barns for the cattle operation that existed and still exists today. Just a quick little history. I know the applicant's done some work with the council and the public on the history of the ranch. There is a rich history of the ranch, beginning with the Von Schroeder era. Von Schroeder was the first to develop the ranch, built a number of the buildings that are still on the site today, and began the agricultural use of the land. The Peabody era was from World War I to 1964. That's when the ranch was really utilized and expanded as a cattle operation. There's the show barn that I showed you a picture of that was built at that point. And then the current era is the Smith family that owns it today, and they're the applicants before you tonight. They've owned it since 1964. In 1982, one of the historic Von Baron properties that was, or units that was on the property, historic house, was destroyed by a lightning fire, unfortunately. In terms of the project that's before us tonight, the request is to process what's called a specific plan, which is a planning tool that allows the master planning of the entire site. That'll be accompanied with a track map. The concept conceptually involves reconfiguring the 452 lots and roadways so that they can be located on areas most appropriate for development. Right now, they're spread across the entire site. Most of the site is too steep to develop. We also would be looking at a variety of housing products and types that would be appropriate, possible neighborhood commercial uses, a system of parks, trails, and open spaces that are appropriate to the site. The idea or concept of adding resort facilities to the site was identified in the general plan. Staff views that as a very important economic component of the project. One of the few growth industries within for Eagle Ranch, the white areas are the areas within the city. Once again, you can see the network of existing paper roads and lots that exist in the area. This is another site just showing you the location in relationship to the city. As I mentioned, the general plan, which was adopted in 2002, anticipated the possible annexation of Eagle Ranch to the city of Atascadero. There's actually four policies that are on the screen that are included in the general plan. They basically all go in the same direction, which is that the city will work with LAFCO to include this area in our sphere of influence. That was done after the general plan was adopted, so this is recognized as an area of annexation. It's the city's position through the general plan that Eagle Ranch should be developed within the city and that the city would be opposed to this property developing within the county. And then it lays out a process by which we would go through a specific plan process and EIR before annexation. So what we're starting tonight is laid out and identified as the proper process for developing this project under our general plan policy. This is our general, one of our general plan diagrams. These show master planned development areas, which are areas that are intended to be master planned before development. You can see the area on the bottoms identified as master plan area number 11, Eagle Ranch annexation, and that identifies the existing lots and the specific plan process. This is our urban reserve diagram out of our general plan. The black line indicates what the general plan envisions as the ultimate city boundaries, so Eagle Ranch was envisioned to be part of the city at build-out. Environmentally, this is a very rich and diverse site. I've just put in some slides from our city GIS system that shows some of the environmental issues that we'll deal with as we go through the planning and EIR process. Wetlands and Blue Line Creeks are an important environmental issue. Eagle Ranch has a number of these facilities, or features, rather. Here is Atascadero Creek, as I mentioned, the headwaters that run down and then through Mora Road. Also, Paloma Creek originates on the Eagle Ranch. So those are the types of issues that we'll look at in terms of flooding, the water quality, and the biological habitats that are related to Blue Line Creeks, figure out ways to work the development in and around these features so these features are not impacted negatively. This is our slope map, so any of the areas that are red would be areas over 30%, which are typically determined to be too steep for development. You can see probably almost half the site is over 30%. These areas over here that are very steep are also areas with paper lots and roads. One of the advantages of doing the specific plan will be the ability to move those lots and roads off these very steep areas. If this was to develop in the county without being able to adjust the roads and lots, we would end up with, or we would see a lot of significant grading and impacts to the slopes and hillsides as they try to develop in these areas that really aren't suited for development. So trying to fit this development onto the flatter areas of the site is going to be one of the key issues we deal with. The city did prepare a native tree map a couple of years ago. This is some of the information off the native tree map. You can see the kind of bluish areas are stands of blue oaks, the brown areas are stands of live oaks, and the dark green would be the live oak areas. Green areas would be grassland, so you can see kind of the pattern of trees on the site. One of the goals of the project will be to minimize our impacts on the woodlands and try to incorporate those woodlands into open spaces where possible. We also have done a habitat study. The darker the green, the higher the habitat values, so this will be another component of the planning exercise. This is a habitat map that just shows potential wildlife corridors and connectivity. So these are the types of issues we'll be looking at through the planning process as well. So where we're at right now in terms of the planning approvals that we need and where we're at tonight, as I mentioned before, tonight the decision before the council is fairly simple. Can staff process this application? So that's the only thing we're dealing with tonight. If we get permission to move forward with this application, there's a number of items that we're going to have to start working on. The first will be the general plan amendment, creating a general plan land use map that's appropriate for the site, which will go through the public participation process and through the alternatives process. There'll be an accompanying zoning map that will be similar to the general plan map that will have to be adopted. We'll prepare a specific plan, which is also the master plan for the entire site. There may be one or a series of what are called tentative maps that would basically take all those existing lots and rows of these meetings, depending on the type of input and issues that are raised as we go through the process. As I mentioned, the specific plan is a key part of it. Just quick summary of the specific plan. It is the preferred approach for master planning large, complicated sites like this. It's prescribed by state law. One of the benefits of a specific plan is it allows you to deal with complex financing and phasing issues. Project of this scale will have a lot of infrastructure requirements. Specific plan's a really good way to deal with those types of issues. The EIR process is required by the California Environmental Quality Act, as I mentioned. That's a document that's going to analyze not only this project but alternatives and be available for the public and council to make an informed decision on the project. The EIR process will start sometime after we've done some alternatives and public outreach and workshops. This is a quick summary of the steps that are required in the EIR process. We have a flow chart here that just shows that the specific plan process and the EIR process will end up running more or less simultaneously. Once we develop alternatives through the specific plan process, we'll likely come back and ask for the council to authorize the EIR process. We'll do analysis and draft plans together. Eventually, we'll bring that all back for Planning Commission and City Council hearings at the end of the process. This is a process that will take a couple years, so it is something that we'll start on and we'll come back to the City Council a number of times to check in before we get to a final product. So in terms of the actions that are available to the City Council, there's basically two options. One would be to adopt Draft Resolution A. That would direct and authorize staff to begin the process of preparing the specific plan. The second option would be to withhold that authorization. That doesn't deny the project. It just prevents staff from working on it, so the project would basically remain in kind of a state of limbo. It's not something to approve or deny, but without authorization, staff can't move forward with it. And because this is a legislative act, it's up to the council to decide if you want us to work on it or not. The third option would be to refer it back to the city staff if you need any additional information before making either of those two choices as a decision. And that will conclude staff's report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Warren. Mayor Pro Tem Bayrou.
I know you probably won't be able to necessarily answer these questions, but I thought I'd bring them up, and you can give me any feedback you can. I noticed that we have that picture that's on the screen right there, but there's also a significant portion that is adjacent to Forest Service lands. Will the Forest Service have any jurisdiction or be purchasing lands, or are they going to be involved in this process as well?
We will be notifying all the affected agencies, including the forest, of any plans we are proposing within our sphere. The area that's contiguous to the Forest Service lands located in the county wouldn't be part of our project, and the applicant could probably best describe their plans, but it's my understanding that they're looking at some sort of long-term or permanent open space conservation easement that would be a way to permanently preserve the agricultural use of those properties, and I guess ideally would be very consistent with being next to the Forest Service lands.
Okay. And then could you clarify for me, because it's currently county land, how does that affect property taxes and income for our city if we annex Eagle Ranch?
That would be part of the LAFCO reorganization process. We would have to negotiate with the county on the share of the property taxes and what the splits would be. At this point, we're not sure. We haven't done an annexation recently with the county, so we're not sure what those splits would be. And like I said, it's a negotiation process.
Okay. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes. My concern as we move forward, we're talking about a specific plan, an EIR, and my concern is how is the city going to get paid? Let's say that they go through part of this process and they abort the project, or we decide not to to annex it for whatever reason. How are you going to get paid?
Because this is an annexation and a specific plan process, our fees are set up that they are required to give us an upfront deposit, and then they'll have to reimburse staff or the city for staff time as we incur time or use up those deposits. So we'll come in with enough money to get started. As we exhaust those deposits, we'll ask for more money. So that is the conservation easement. Then in addition to that, because of the slopes and the constraints on the city portion, we would expect a significant portion of the site also to be an open space.
Right, and there's no colony lots in that green area there?
No, there is a lot pattern, the old township and range lots, but there aren't any colony lots there.
I see. And then the property tax, Ellen asked the question, so we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. I know the county likes to get all they can. The other thing is, my concern isn't that when, you know, this was first brought forward a few years back, they talked about a convention center and hotels and this and that and everything. And I hope we don't get into a situation like we did at Dove Creek, where we had a mixed use that kind of expanded into more housing, more housing, more housing, and then a little corner of a commercial that isn't going to be developed for a while, it doesn't look like. So I hope that we can hold them to the to the commercial, or otherwise it just doesn't make sense. So that's my comments.
Councilmember Luna, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Are there now existing alternatives, so to speak, or what is the timing for when we actually see some kind of alternative?
We haven't developed a timeline. We wanted to get authorization to proceed. Once we have authorization to proceed, that'll be one of the first things we'll negotiate with the applicant, is some sort of first phase of steps of public participation, development of some sort of concepts, and then identify appropriate times to come back to the City Council to check in with where the alternatives are going as we develop a preferred project concept. But we haven't spent any time working that out, because we don't know if this is actually a project that we're going to get authorization to proceed on.
Well, when you go to the public and go through the public process, are you going to present to them essentially a blank slate, or do you have some kind of idea in mind as to what you're eventually going to recommend?
Staff-wise, we don't have a concept yet. It's my understanding that the applicant's development team has come up with some concepts. Staff hasn't seen them yet. That'll be one of the items that we'll discuss, is what exactly to present to the public in terms of existing plans versus blank slate. There's some different ways to approach that, and that hasn't been determined yet.
The staff has a lot on its plate with Del Rio, Colony Square Project, and then this. Are we going to have to hire more staff members to cover this?
Right now we have three full-time planners. We're carrying some interns. Some of these parts of the project, including the EIRs, will be taken care of by consultants. We do believe in the short term we've got adequate staffing, just because most of the other entitlement work that the planners have been working on for the last couple of years has slowed down significantly due to the slowdown in the economy. So this is actually an ideal time to process these projects.
And if necessary, you could hire a contract planner? Is that?
We right now currently have a vacant contract planning position, and we haven't filled that just because we're trying to get a better handle on our budget constraints, as well as the workload that's out there. As these projects begin to move forward, we'll have a better handle on what our staffing needs are.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Luna voiced my concern about juggling too many balls in the air, but you feel that there'll be sufficient manpower to take on this project? That's what I'm hearing?
Yes.
And then a geography lesson, if you will. If you could go back to either the creek map or the slope map, perhaps. I'm just curious, just for my education, just the general area of the headwaters, if you know.
Yeah, let me get a little map here, pen. I think the headwaters, I guess it's not going to draw. The headwaters are located, hang on, I got the laser pointer. The headwaters start roughly here and then snake along this canyon, and then they come down to 41 and then run down 41 to downtown. So that's basically, that's probably the headwaters right there, is that green area, the flatter area.
I see. Thank you. And are there any other questions? Councilmember O'Malley?
Thank you. As I understand, this is a project that would be cost reimbursed, so any costs associated with this project are borne by the applicant. Is that correct?
Yeah, in terms of the staff, the planning staff, development staff, team, our costs will be reimbursed.
So if the fact that you have a lot of excess staff time because of the slowdown, it's a good time, but even if something picked up, you'd simply could add staff and it's cost reimbursed, so it's new.
We will oppose that. We have a number of concerns with it developing in the county. One of the concerns is that all the access points to Eagle Ranch are through the city. So if this was to develop in the county, we wouldn't have any control over the development, but all the impacts to circulation, infrastructure, sewer would be to the city, as well as emergency services. Clearly, our police and fire would be the first responders here, but if it weren't within the city, that would be basically something that would be hard to fund. The other concerns we have with developing the county is likely they would follow more the existing pattern of lots and roads, because they probably wouldn't have the ability to do a wholesale reconfiguration. There would be a significant amount of negative environmental impacts if they were to try to cut those roads through those 30 and 50% slopes the way E.G. Lewis had laid them out.
Sure. And so, of course, there is benefit of us having control over the heads of the creeks that end up in our area, and there's the ability to reconfigure the lots to something that might be more acceptable, and there's a potential of actually having a commercial aspect. But there's not the potential to get in some kind of a catch-22 where we say, no, we don't want you to process, and by the way, we are going to oppose you trying to process your existing legal lots. Someone has to proceed on this at some level of government. I'm not sure what happens if we reach a stalemate on this.
Well, from the city standpoint, the specific plan annexation is, as I described, a legislative act. So you're not compelled to do that. You can decide not to process it or decide to do it at a later time. That's clearly a policy decision that the council can make. At the county level, the county's a little different depending on what kind of applications they get. So if they get building permits on existing lots of record, they're going to be compelled to process those. Now, the city, we may have concerns about the environmental process and things like that, but that is one of the concerns, is that at a county level, you could just see a very slow piecemealing of the site, which would probably be the worst-case development scenario for this significant and, you know, magnificent piece of property.
Well, that'd be my concern. That's what's happened in a lot of areas of Atascadero, is we have a lot of existing lots that if you don't master plan them, they'd be developed individually. And that could happen with the county here. Let's say if the owner said, well, we'll just sell off a few lots at a time. That's an option they would have.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Clay?
For the public's sake, in regards to water and colony lots, it was my understanding over the years I've been on the council that each colony lot has the right to water just like any other colony lot. In other words, my lot was developed in 1916 or something like that. It doesn't have any more rights to the water than those 450 lots out there. And that was been my understanding over the years.
That's right. All the lot owners are shareholders in the water company. The water company recognizes that all the shareholders have rights to that water. We've already spoken with the water company. They do understand that this is in the long-term plans. As we go through the environmental process, we still will have to do a review of the water resources. That's part of the state law on large master plan projects. So we'll look into the availability of long-term water resources and the ability of the water company to serve it, but it's the water company's position that they will provide service to whatever lots are developed there.
Yeah, the way it was explained to me, if there's 10 gallons of water left, then we split that up between every colony lot, so to speak, that needs it. So.
Are there any other questions? Well, let's open it up to perhaps the applicant would like to speak first. Mr. Montgomery, or...
Oh, thank you, Mayor and City Council. I'm Gregory Smith, and I'm one of the four owners of Eagle Ranch, LLC. Really appreciate the staff presentation. After looking at it, I have very little to add. We're just here to answer any of your questions. We do support the staff's recommendation to move forward. We will be very judicious of their time. We know it's expensive, and we know it's precious to you as well. To answer one question, I know there is no project planned in the county areas. They're outside the sphere of influence. We are not doing any project there, but we are negotiating with a conservation easement on that particular piece. We would like you to move forward at this time. We're certainly prepared to. It is what's called for in your general plan, and it's what's called for in our memorandum of
commissioners. And I did meet with you and thought I got a preview of some of the thoughts you had for this project. And I believe you're planning on considering a commercial component or a resort component or something along those lines. And I think that is important to me, and I think other council members in the community. Is that, I know you can't pin that down, but is that some agreeable to the partners that there will be some component in this project?
Yes, and we have met with members that we can to getting input into this as well as the community. Our goal is here. We're not asking for any more entitlements than we have now.
Sure.
However, we're certainly receptive to looking at many of these other issues. We think probably a neighborhood-serving commercial, which is very different than maybe what would be appropriate. And we think this can be included and incorporated if it's done tastefully.
Good. And I won't be charged for any motorcycle tracks I may have done there when I was in high school or anything.
Well, we think a few people other than you we'd have to charge.
Okay,
on that.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Barreau.
I just had a question in your development team's mind. What do you see as the timeline in terms of what your expectations are?
Well, if we can start tonight and be authorized to start meeting with your staff, we expect it'll take probably some. I may let them speak to that now that you're thinking about it, but I'm sure about 6 months to develop a conceptual land use plan. We have our vision as owners, but there's a lot to go through, we know, for working with staff and working with the planners on it.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there other questions of Mr. Smith?
Good evening, John Knight. I'm a planner and project manager with RRM Design Group. Greg and I have been working on this project for many years. We participated in some of the SMU folks were also participating in the general plan update. And this project is within the general plan. Our efforts will implement your general plan by providing a specific plan. We do have many levels of processing that we will be beginning on. We're early in the process in terms of doing the design work, the site planning work. That's probably the question I get asked most is, what's your site plan look like? Yes, we have done a few scribbles on paper, but we're not at a point that we have a conceptual site plan to really share. We will have an opportunity to meet with your city, assuming we go forward tonight. I think Greg's estimate of 6 months is probably accurate in terms of preparing a site plan. I did want to respond to a comment or a question by Councilmember Luna about how we go about that process, and Warren and I and your staff have to get together and talk about exactly how we want to get the public involved in the process and the staff. I do want to mention that we typically don't go with a blank slate. It's very difficult to go to the public and say, what do you want? Well, boy, a park would be great. So, we usually don't start with a blank slate. We usually start with what we consider as a conceptual alternative and get some input on that alternative. So that, I think that's the direction that we're going to be heading at that time. We still have a long ways to go even to get to that point. There's a couple comments about the commercial aspect, and I just want to make sure people understand we're talking about neighborhood serving commercial. We're not talking about larger regional draw commercial. Now, that's different than the resort aspect, which is intended to be more of a regional draw. We do have a very specialized hotel consultant working with us, and we've had an opportunity to share that scope with some of the city staff, looking at what type of resort, how big is the resort. We've also asked them to comment on what we thought of was the best location for the resort, and we hope to have that in a month or so, and we can share that. We don't have that available at this time. But we'd like an opportunity to answer any questions that might come up from the public. Again, we don't have a site plan. We're very early in the process. But we do encourage you to support the authorization to move forward. Thank you very much.
And thank you. Councilmember Clay, you had a question?
I just wanted to reemphasize how important it is that this resort proposal is followed through and the hotel. You know, I understand, I haven't been out there, but I understand where the lake is and probably where the house is and so on. It's a beautiful area. And I just wanted to emphasize how important that is that be part of the project and that somehow it doesn't get, you know, smaller and smaller and maybe just go away. So hopefully that'll be an important part of it for the city.
And thank you. We recognize that is, and that was included as specific language as part of the general plan, and it's our intention to incorporate a resort component. Thank you.
I just had a brief comment, Mr. Knight, that if you get the green light and go down this road of conceptualization, I certainly hope that everyone is sensitive to the issue of encumbrance of the taxpayer with infrastructure improvements that obviously will occur. So
I am hoping that the ranch development, I know that I can't chain myself to a tree and make it stop, so I'm going to have to kind of bite the bullet and go along with the development that I'm not very pleased with. I live next door to an absolutely magnificent gem. It is so beautiful to look at every morning. We have had bears walk down our fence line. We have mountain lion. We have coyotes. We have fox. We have everything next door on the ranch. And I hope to God that when you develop this ranch, that you take the wildlife into consideration and you make sure that they're able to move about and not be fenced out of trees and waterways. One of the main concerns I have is how are you going to put a road through? We already have increased traffic on Atascadero Avenue, and on the weekends it's like a speedway. People just race up and down that road. And we've got an elementary school on Santa Rosa, and I'm always worried about kids getting run over on their bicycles. I really hope that you put a connecting road through the ranch and down to 41, because with all of this extra flow of traffic, Atascadero Avenue is going to be like sitting on a freeway. I'm also concerned that the sewer hookup is probably a half mile from my house, so my neighbors and I are a half a mile from the sewer, which obviously is going to need to come down the street. And I really hope that you don't make the neighbors bear the cost of bringing that sewer down the street. The other thing that I would really strongly recommend, and I have friends here tonight to support me in this, that you create some marvelous trails, recreational trails, and not just for people on bicycles and on foot, some equestrian trails. This is an equestrian neighborhood. We used to live in a rural neighborhood, and we have all of this development quickly encroaching on us, and we have nowhere to really ride our horses anymore. And if we're going to have this development, I think it needs to be balanced and accessible for everyone, not an exclusive resort-gated community, but an area where everyone can go out and appreciate the magnificence of the ranch and get a chance to look at the wildlife while they're still alive and really appreciate the area we live in. Thank you.
Thank you. Your points are well taken, and hopefully you'll continue to participate if we go down that road. Oh, can I get your name for the record? I'm sorry. Did you get that, Marcia? All right. Thank you. Welcome.
Sandy Jack. My property butts up against the Eagle Ranch also, just to give you a... what I'd like to do, based upon experiences that I've had in other parts of the country, other parts of California, in dealing with LAFCO, that I would suggest and recommend that you move on with the process so that you can get the control of how that area is developed. Because LAFCO is its own entity, and it typically, and based on the history that I've experienced firsthand with them, they do what they want to do. And so if you have any, since it is within the sphere of influence, there's a good chance that you can bring it under that, under the city influence, and I would encourage you to proceed in that manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to comment?
Hello. I'm John Lee Estenis. I'm an Atascadero citizen and a Parks and Recreation Commissioner. As you consider the Eagle Ranch specific plan and annexation, please look closely at some other recent developments for help in giving the developer input and guidelines. The Las Lomas development and Anza Estates are two areas where the developers worked with the city to provide multi-purpose trails for the community. In all these areas, these trail segments can connect with the larger city, county, and statewide trail systems. Our general plan does show trail plan for this Eagle Ranch development. Please make planning consideration of a multi-use trail system that connects to the Atascadero Creek Trail System on the west through the Eagle Ranch development to the Paloma Creek Park on the east early on in the development process. I would urge the City Council to activate an Atascadero Trails Committee to help in this process. People to ask the developer not waste water on front lawns, which are most often for show, and save that water usage for the backyard where it would be more utilized by the families in this development. And there's so many things to consider besides just paths, but I figure if I stick to one topic and we go forward to annexation, in those public forums, we'll be able to bring up a lot more. So I'm just going to keep on going. Remember, connectivity is the key now more than ever with the gas prices and things. Don't do the trails as an afterthought. It has to come at the beginning. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
My name is Kathy Redden, and while, again, I echo the sentiments of a lot of people here that we'd hate to see this developed, but we already have a paper subdivision, so it likely will happen, so we have a lot of issues that we do need to consider. Trails, of course, is a big one. The access to the forest is really important. If we're going to have a trail system out there, we need to be able to get to this forest that most of us have never been able to get to from this side. Traffic is a big issue. I live at the corner of San Gabriel and Atascadero Avenue, and has been stated already, it's already extremely busy. It's only going to get worse, and circulation is going to be a big issue. The environmental issues, all the wildlife and the habitat need to be really paid attention to, and the density I would recommend to be as minimal as possible. We really want to avoid McMansions out there. We want it to be affordable as much as possible for the people who currently live there, and not that people outside the community to come in to big homes that none of us else get to see and enjoy what's out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening. Jim Wilkins. My grandfather ran that property for 52 years, and he worked for the Smith family, and my grandfather was a very honest gentleman. He was a very unique man as far as preservation. He worked with the Smith family, and they're a very, very honest family. And I think whatever they would step up and say they'd do, they would do. And that property is very precious. It's very precious to my heart, and I know it's precious to the Smiths, and it's precious to Atascadero. That's why E.G. Lewis bought and developed here. So I would encourage you to move forward on this project. Thank you.
And thank you.
Are there any other comments from the public? Seeing none, we will bring it back to the council. And Council Member Clay, it looks like you... All right. Council Member O'Malley.
Well, sure, and I have heard from a couple members in the public through emails and a phone call or two, and I think the main concern I heard about was infrastructure needs, Mayor Brindler had referenced, and I think that's why it's important to take a look at a plan such as this where these items can be considered. We've seen things when they're done piecemeal and a lot of these issues aren't addressed, and I think I was going to ask about the sewer situation. I think all these items can be answered during the process, of course, but, you know, that's an obvious question. And I think you've heard some of the input tonight, and that'll be addressed. And with that, I'm willing to make the motion we adopt draft resolution A, recommended by staff.
I'll second the motion. We might want more discussion.
Sure.
I'll second the
and
motion.
Does anyone else, would they like to comment?
Well, I support the motion, so I'm willing to.
And I simply want to say that clearly the public has made some passionate suggestions, and so I'm hoping that the city, I support this, and I hope that the city and the developing interest can get together and make something work, something that everyone can be proud of. So. With that in mind, we have a motion by Councilmember O'Malley, a second by Councilmember Clay. And that was, you want to restate the motion? Or?
No, it's fine. Adopt draft resolution A.
That's sufficient?
Yes.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Luna?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Barreau?
Yes.
Mayor Brindler?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to our next item, which is a downtown streetscape phase 2. And that will be presented, I believe, by Steve Kahn, Public Works Director.
Yes, Steve? Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. This is the next phase of the streetscapes project. We're very excited about it. Deputy Public Works Director Dave Athey is with me here tonight, and he has done a tremendous job with this project about gathering input from the council, commissions, and the public and Main Street, and really made this project his own. So with that, David will present a brief overview of the project and where we are today.
Thank you, Steve. Include the sunken gardens and also the recently completed Lewis Avenue Bridge. That brings us up to where we are today. In 2007, we started the Phase 2 project. The process consisted of a kickoff meeting with Main Street, and this was all council approved, as you remember, last year. A kickoff meeting with Main Street to identify areas where we'd like to that the actual citizens that inhabited the downtown or used the downtown, the business owners, the landowners, would like to see improved. We then went on a downtown walking tour with the Main Street and the public. We then held a city council town hall meeting to talk about the different project areas and flesh out the details, have the participants vote on their favorite projects. Really started off from scratch. We didn't have any preconceived ideas, so we let the public guide us in this process, and we'll talk about those project areas in a second. As an extra step, after the town hall meeting, we went back to Main Street, presented those ideas one last time to get final buy-in. They did buy into those projects, which isn't surprising from the fact that they were really led and driven by the public and Main Street. So that takes us where we are today to our project areas. The approved project areas include the Traffic Way and Palma Avenue intersection, Virginia Plaza mid-block crosswalk, Rosario Avenue gateway, the Colony Square entry arch to the Atascadero Creek Bridge on El Camino Real, and the pedestrian tunnel. So Palma and Traffic Way, as you see on the screen, this is a picture of the Palma and Traffic Way intersection as it is today. Not much there. We do have bike lanes. It's a nice wide street. We do have problems with speeding on this street, so we took a long look at how do we slow traffic down and improve this visually for the pedestrian and the business owners downtown. This is kind of an overview of the site. The plan in general includes bulb outs on the intersections. Includes bulb outs on the intersections, and now I want to take you to an enhanced view. So as I mentioned, the bulb outs are here on each corner, also one across the street. This has the benefit of reducing traffic lane width, but we also can keep the bike lanes in this area the same width. There's also a median in the middle preventing left outs, as we discussed prior. There's a new paver band, actual paver crosswalks in this area. The added benefit of having the bulb outs actually decreases the width of the road so that the pedestrian has a much shorter travel area across the road. The lower half, where they're going west on traffic way, down to the bottom of the screen is the Carlton Hotel area. Towards the top of the screen, you'd be going out towards the New Colony Community Center. So Palma comes down from the north and ties in the traffic way. We'll also have a new ADA ramps on this corner, where none exist right now. We're going to have new paving on traffic way in this area. And we also have two bid alternates with an eye towards, we talked about saving money or being frugal with the money we have. We have two bid alternates that we're looking at. We're hoping to get good bids, and if they come back reasonably priced, we will build these areas also in the bid alternates. And there's one here, and there's two here on Palma. So we'll look at building those if the bids come back reasonably priced. Also, part of this project, since we are eliminating left outs from Palma, we are going to proposing to restripe Entrada Avenue to two-way. Currently, this is one-way from Palma down to Lewis Avenue. We two-way this would not result in any losses of parking in this area, and would just provide a secondary route to enter this intersection right here. The next project area that we're currently out to bid on is the Virginia Plaza Crosswalk. This is the current location of the Virginia Plaza Crosswalk. Staff is proposing to move this crosswalk up the street past the drive approach at the bottom of the screen. This is the actual entrance, the north entrance to Virginia Plaza, approximately about 50 feet. This is a plan showing the proposed improvements. This is the current crosswalk, if they're reasonably priced, but we wanted to actually save our dollars so we could build the later improvements that we'll be talking about in a second.
Dave, when you say bid alternates, that means you would extend the paving features and those kind of things? I just want to make it clear to the public what do you mean by...
No, that's an excellent question. I'm sorry, I didn't explain that well enough. There's areas, that's correct, so it'd be the same curb, gutter, sidewalk, street trees, street lights. Whatever improvements are in those areas that are their alternate bids, they would be built to the same streetscape standard.
Yeah, if I could just add to that, what we do is we get a base bid that is the core project, and then we get bid alternates. And when we go to award the project, we can either just award the base bid or award the base bid and the alternates, depending on the prices we get from the contractor.
That's correct. So the next project area we're moving into now is the Rosario Gateway. This project area is currently in design, and we're really excited about it. This is our alternate area for our entry arch, and the improvements here consist of new bulb outs on either side of El Camino Real, new medians in El Camino Real, new crosswalks across El Camino Real. We're looking at realigning the throat or the entrance to Rosario Avenue, which is right here. Because right now, as you can see, this is about the alignment as you come up. It allows people to drive really fast around that corner, and the police and folks exiting the police facility here have a hard time seeing these folks when they're coming up so fast. So this will also actually have a secondary benefit of traffic calming on Rosario by putting those bulb outs in and realigning that the throat of Rosario Avenue. This also includes new landscaping in this area next to the entrance to Highway 101, and also London Plain trees, lights, new bus stop features on either side of the road, the city standard bus stop we showed at the last council meeting, and the new medians. Now, as part of this project, staff studied what we call a lane diet or a traffic diet. Looking at the road, looking at El Camino Real, and saying, you know, let's take a critical look at traffic volumes. Is the traffic, is the road actually too wide for the traffic volumes we have? So one of the ideas, we took a look at the accident rates on El Camino Real. It's the average accident rate per year, I believe, in each stretch is about five. Typical is about 3, so we're over the average accident rate, so it's a little more dangerous of a road. So we looked at, okay, what can we do to lower the accident rate, provide more access to folks on the west side of El Camino Real, which is the bottom here. This is Traffic Way. This is Rosario, El Camino Real. What can we do to calm traffic, lower the accident, enhance safety in that area, lower the accident rate, provide access to the west side, provide a safe turning lane movement to the east side. And we evaluated that through a traffic study with Rick Engineering, and the results came back and said, basically, based on traffic volumes now and then projected into the future, reducing a lane on El Camino Real southbound will help us do that, will help us calm traffic, and also provide safer turning movements, because a majority of our accidents in this area are rear-enders or T-bone accidents. So having a left turn lane by turning the number one lane into a center turn lane here will help us achieve that. This improvement also stretches down to San Jacinto Avenue, starting about where the water company offices are. So This whole stretch of El Camino Real has this, and as part of this project, so it will also allow us to put a bigger median in this area right here so we can get some larger street trees in there. So as this project moves forward and comes out, we're going to come back and propose to have a lane drop on southbound El Camino Real.
And if I could just clarify what David means by a lane drop is we'll have one southbound lane on El Camino Real from San Jacinto to Traffic Way. There will not be two, which, like you said, will help calm traffic coming into the town and provide a two-way left-hand turn lane to the center of the road to turn into businesses on either side of the road. So it'll be a big benefit to the downtown.
It also has an added benefit. Right now, a lot of folks do U-turns right here at the entrance to US 101. This will also help eliminate that because now we have a safer turning, I kind of call a loafing area, a place to be in your car in the center turn lane, cars per day.
So could we say more leaving town than coming to town?
Well, we hope to get more coming in by doing these improvements. The next area we want to talk about is the El Camino Real entry arch. This is the area right in front of Colony Square. Colony Square is this area right here. Rabobank is to the bottom of the screen. Denny's is in this area. And the Rancho T Hotel is here. So this project basically consists of a median, an entry arch, new street trees, new drainage, new bulb outs on either side of the road. Really, really have an effect of beautifying this area. So this is a photo simulation of the entry arch and what it will look like if you're standing looking north at about Colony Square. Staff has gone up and down the road and looked and see how far that this arch is visible, and we believe it's just about visible from the on-ramp at 101 at Rosario and then down past the Vaughan Shopping Center. You can see from this location, you can see the sign. From those locations, you can see the sign. The PED tunnel. Work on the PED tunnel is ongoing. We've currently got approval from Caltrans for the landscaping portion of it. We're still working on the ADA access, American with Disability Act access. We have to make sure that if we do work here on either end of the tunnel that we make it accessible. Public Works feels really strongly about doing that. We're also looking at the lighting design, making sure the inside of the tunnel is really well lit. And also, there was comments that came up last time about having this. I'm showing this picture right now as a indication of what we'd like to do, but you know, doing something here with this light to make sure it doesn't shine in your face. So we're still working on that. Conceptual improvements right now. This is the high school side. This is the downtown side. It's kind of an unglamorous picture here. Basically, widening the tunnel as much as we can. On the high school side, we have a problem with I think it's a 92-inch culvert that goes underneath the freeway, drains basically the west side of the area. So we're working with Caltrans to do some modification of that culvert. On the east side, which is the downtown side, we're going to widen that area, provide a new ramp down inside. There's a kind of a hump in front of the tunnel right here. We're looking at taking down also, and we're making it more accessible, more beautiful with the landscaping. Yes.
Are you getting any input from the high school or junior high people that use that tunnel?
We haven't yet.
Is that planned at all? Or
I'm sorry?
Is there any plan to include?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
Yes.
I think that would be a good idea.
Well, with that concludes my presentation. Oh, excuse me. I want to talk about project costs at the moment. Currently, we have about $3.26 million budgeted RDA money, including bus stop money, transit money, and wayfinding money for this project. The Virginia Plaza crosswalk with contingency, that includes design, overhead, staff costs, is estimated to be about $220,000. The Pullman Traffic Way intersection, about $675,000. Now, that depends largely on material costs, labor costs. Recently, Public Works, we're hopeful we'll get really competitive bids. We have a lot of plans set out for these areas, but we're watching that really closely at this time. So after this project, we are estimating at this point that $2.36 million be left to do the remaining project areas, including the paving, in front of Colony Square and in the area from Rosario to Traffic Way, including those areas also. So that's we're really hopeful. You know, we want to get some really good, strong bids back so now we can go back to the design table, so to speak, and make sure what we're proposing in the future projects, we can still meet our budget and decide if we need to what to recommend to cut out. With that wraps up my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well done, Dave. Thank you. Lots of improvements headed our way. That's
Thank
a good thing. Are there any other questions from council before I open it to the public? Councilmember Luna?
David, have you got comment from the fire department, particularly for the north El Camino portion?
Yes, I have. We've run this by the police and fire departments.
Okay, great.
Mayor Pro Tem Burrow?
The question is, so if you drop a lane going southbound, right, does it go back to two-lane once you cross Traffic Way?
Yes, it does. It actually goes back to two-lane before we get the Traffic Way, because we need to have a left-turn lane
to
there.
To turn at the light. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, I was just trying to envision it in my mind. Thanks.
You bet.
So, all right, let's move on to our final matter, which is the Emergency Preparedness and Evacuation Plan Update. That's presented by Kurt Stone, the Fire Chief.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. Thank you for the opportunity. Bear with us just a minute as we get the slideshow up and going. Thank you. Again, good evening and thank you. I wanted to give you a brief history on where emergency planning, disaster planning, and training has been the past 4 years. Believe it or not, it's generally always going on in various departments and at various levels in all of our departments. So give you a brief history from 2004 to present. As you probably know, and if not, federal, state, and county require that we plan and that we have an emergency plan. It's important that we use planning. The fire service and law enforcement use planning and ICS on a daily basis so that we become familiar with and practice the way we actually play in the real event of an emergency. Also, a couple of years ago, the federal government put some strings on it that said, if you have an emergency that's state or federal declared, we will not grant reimbursement from OES and from FEMA if we don't have a viable plan that's been approved. To give you the background on this, in 2003 we received a grant. Some of the council members sitting were actually approved that. In spring of 2004, council adopted the plan. 2004, we exercised the plan and conducted an overview through the city. 2005, we conducted tabletop exercise, and this is an example of the tabletop exercise, which is a full EOC activation, but the field components weren't activated at the time. 2005, again, the Operations Center training, which we call DOC training, where we actually, what we realized in the 2005 exercise, the EOC exercise, is a lot of departments were still uncomfortable with the plan. While they were familiar with it, they didn't quite understand their role and how they fit in the emergency situation and in the EOC, and also how that translated into the field and affected the workers, the people that were actually getting the job done in the field. So we broke it off that year. We did not exercise that year, and in the past, councils directed us to exercise, train, and update our plan annually. What we focused on was our DOC, or Department Operations, training, and we worked with each individual department on a very small basis. We had representatives from city manager's office, and we worked in finance. We worked in public works and talked to all the various divisions and tried to address on their level and from a field approach as well as a management approach what tools, what they needed, how the plan worked, how it didn't work. And instead of answering or asking questions of all city employees in a forum-type setting where there's 80 people there, we tried to get very intimate and almost a one-on-one with each of the individual departments. We learned a great deal out of that, and in spring of 2006, we had a full activation of the EOC, and many of the council members were at that. All of the staff was involved, and we realized that one of our biggest weaknesses was that in the fire service and law enforcement's mind, we did not have good viable alternatives for west side evacuation in particular. So we took kind of a pilot study approach because we were going on information that was designed in the states that frequently experience hurricanes and tried to develop pre-scripted evacuation routes. And that's the handout that I've given you, and those handouts are available at the back counter. They're also available online. The little brochure I handed out to you is a sample brochure of the Santa Margarita Pozo brochure that we will actually be direct mailing to many of our residents and all of the residents on the west side of Atascadero. We had to ground truth the plan. Well, we thought a great plan and concept, and it looked good on paper. We didn't know if it would work in the field. And so spring of 2007, we did a full-scale EOC activation to actually test this plan. And the plan you have a hard copy of, that will be converted into that a trifold, an 8.5 by 11, not the fourfold that you're currently looking at, and again mailed out to our residents. It's kind of interesting. Originally, we started out with color-coded routes, thinking color department head, all hands on deck, and we turned out everyone in the city. As a matter of fact, we folded it into a county-wide EOC and disaster drill. We staged over 35 engines in the city and actually went up into the hillsides and ground-truthed this map and tried to evaluate if we could work and make this evacuation plan work for us? How many personnel would it take of our staff, public works, law enforcement agencies, mutual aid law enforcement agencies, to coordinate and make this work? We had our partner agencies with us. Salvation Army actually turned out to test their mobilization on short notice. They did not tell their members that they would be responding, yet they gave them the call that morning, and they turned out and fed all of the fire crews as a way to test their readiness and their availability of food, food stocks. Local church was gracious enough to give us the their auditorium so that we could brief, give a safety briefing and safety talks to the fire crews before they head out onto the hillside and practiced if we were having a wildland fire on our west side. At this point, I'll briefly go over our goals and open it up to council for questions. Our current goals are to continue developing evacuation plans and corridor map for the entire west side. Currently, we've only focused on kind of the central and northwest corner, but it is our goal to complete the entire west side. We're currently working on several grant opportunities, namely OTS, to try to target and fund monies that could be used for signage to actually put up, much like what you'd see in the Gulf states where it says hurricane evacuation route. We want to put up a wildland fire evacuation route with these color codes and symbols. And that's ongoing and is obviously going to be driven by budget availability. That's why our first choice is a grant. Development of a program to assist local businesses in disaster recovery. We're going to try to partner with whomever we can. It's been tossed around that we might partner with PG&E, Chamber of Commerce, Better Business, a number of different folks, so that we could help our business owners be more sufficient the first 24 to 72 hours in the event of a disaster and actually rely on our local businesses, much like what we did during the earthquake. We relied heavily on Home Depot and a number of other hardware-type building and lumber trade stores to assist us with rescue equipment, shoring, and lumber that we actually sent to Paso Robles and elsewhere in our own city. And so we're working on a kind of a model plan that the Chamber has discovered, and we're going to try to incorporate it and fold it in and target our business license base through the city, not just Chamber of Commerce members, because there's a lot of businesses that aren't Chamber members, and we want to get this out to everyone. We figure it'll be a little work up front, but in the long term it'll help us down the road because these businesses will be more self-sufficient and partner with us in the response and recovery. Lastly, a lofty goal is to try to get a significant number of staff back to the National Fire Academy to go through EMI, which is the Emergency Management Institute, and that would kind of be our, I don't know, icing on the cake. That would really be significant for our city and county. Lastly, we're continuing to define the roles and responsibilities of a subcommittee that we've created, or a task force called Disaster Preparedness Committee, basically kind of like a safety committee in the city or a traffic committee or whatever. This would be, if we figure if we keep disaster and disaster preparedness and safety in our minds and forefront, then when the time hits and everyone's not thinking about it, hopefully what they've thought about and trained on over the years comes back to them as second nature. And with that, I'll conclude my report and open it to council for any questions.
Thank you, Kurt. We have a question by Councilmember Luna.
Kurt, maybe this is a question for Warren also. Let's take, for example, the Green Triangle Road. It's anticipated that the 3F Meadows project, 3F Meadows extension, will put in a road essentially down to Senegal. Correct. So my question is, I guess for Warren, when is that anticipated to happen? And secondly, if it does happen, Kurt, when will this map change? That is, will an arrow go in the other direction?
We would want this map to stay current to whatever road condition. So as we make infrastructure improvements, Lewis Avenue Bridge was significant to circulation, especially for fire. As we open Balboa and put it back, press it back into emergency access, we want to pick those up and coordinate those and recognize those, and the map certainly would change.
Okay. Warren, any idea when Senegal is...
That is a requirement of the 3F Meadows project. There's a limit to how many houses they can build before that road goes in. They have plans approved to build that road. What's holding them up right now is the residential building economy. There's no demand for houses. They haven't pulled any
paid off. I am a little concerned about some of the parallel areas for emergency preparation and how are we doing on communications, because I know there used to be some, especially out in this area, there used to be some blind spots, and how are we doing with the repeater coverage, and how do you feel about redundancy, and if there is something goes out, speak to that briefly.
Briefly, and I think I'm going to include PD, so Brian, if I miss something there, please hop in. We were able to put together a grant. The fire department was able to put together a Fire Act grant to the tune of $300,000+. PD was able to leverage some grant funds, DOJ-type grants, and we were able to put together a pretty significant radio improvement and upgrade, which benefited Dial-A-Ride, Public Works, Police, Fire. In the future, will be benefiting the sewer department through telemetry and wastewater lift station communications, which are currently done via phone line or cell phone, believe it or not. It'll significantly improve the communications with our parks and our watering systems. And I know that's not specifically what you're asking, we were able to leverage the grant funds in such a way that we were able to keep it broad enough that we could pick up a number of ancillary operational benefits to the city. We do have redundancy in that we now have three operable radio sites. Those sites can function independently while they're all set up currently, so that the two lower sites, one on Pine Mountain and one we partnered with Tascadero State Hospital on, actually communicate way out into the Castle Rock Development Company's water tank, the water company's water tank up there, and they communicate via microwave. One of the issues we had during the earthquake is we lost radio communications because we had phone line breaches, and that's the way our mountaintops used to communicate with each other.
Site to site.
Once or twice a year, maybe every other year, we'd have a backhoe put a backhoe through the line, and we would lose our radio sites as well. They've been hardened. They now have generator backup, and all three sites are independent of each other. While they work together, they can work independently. Additionally, here at City Hall, one of the problems during the earthquake, police and fire and public works did a pretty good job of communicating, but the phones were out, the cell phones were overused or overtaxed, and the local phones worked at times but not continuously. And we've installed and licensed through FCC a new radio system for City Hall so that we could have an admin type net, so that we could run folks on a 24-hour, they could go home, go to bed, and we would have redundant coverage. We could call staff back in when we go to 24 hours and split our staff. We could page them in the middle of the night through this radio system. It could also be used for special events, and we built it with that intent so that when we have colony days and hot El Camino nights and large crowds in the downtown, we have a service net, if you will, a non-emergency service net that can communicate with those folks. And all of those radio systems can work together or independent of each other.
Well, I think that's good. You covered my question. You brought up another good point that I guess we'll have to give Wade, our city manager, credit for, is I think it's been very good to have multiple departments work together in leveraging funds. But I think another issue you pointed out that's important for emergency preparation is having these other departments work with you, like parks and the road crews sometimes need that tractor to come and do some work for you. And I know you guys work well together, and I think that's commendable as well. One other area I noticed on the – you tend to do it with CDF a little bit more, and I see on the other handout you gave, along these routes there's some safe zones, or let's say you can't make it to these evacuation sites, and it's pretty hard for us to have some defendable space out in our hills, even a wide spot in the road, but are there any possibilities of having some safe zones in the future, or is that just not feasible given our terrain?
That's a difficult question to answer. You know, the terrain is so specific. A lot of times, wide spots in the road, flat areas that are well weed abated, individual homes within a neighborhood can actually act as very good safe refuge or evacuation areas on a temporary basis.
Yeah.
If our citizens are caught or visitors are caught in their homes, can't evacuate, or in their vehicles, the brochure we handed out has a lot of tips, what to do if you're caught, if you're cut off from evacuation. Good. And we want to get that information into the citizens' hands and answer questions ahead of time so that hopefully they can take care of themselves should they be unfortunate and get caught.
Thank you.
Are we on track with the Balboa Road on being passable?
Yes, the design will be on your next city council agenda, and we hope to do some grading perhaps in July and the bulk of the work in September as we're waiting for some.
And so you can certainly get in touch with the Charles Paddock Zoo, 805-801-7218, if you are interested. I just happen to have some tickets with me in case the city manager or fire chief or anyone needs tickets. Or council members. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And I just wanted to thank everyone who participated in Children's Day at the park, as well as the last week, and as well as the events at the our community library for the 20th anniversary, celebrating the library. And it was those events were well attended. A lot of happy children, and that's what Atascadero should be all about. And I'll also comment that on June 10th is Hunger Awareness Day, and all the mayors have signed on in challenging that if everyone in this county will give $1, we can sure go to a we can feed a lot of people. And there's additional information that you can receive at slowfoodbank.org, and it would be this is a wonderful charitable event and. It certainly is a good cause to try and nick the hunger issue. So that is it for me. And Ellen?
I don't have any announcements.
I have no announcements.
Maybe this would be a good time for me to say what I'm going to say.
You'd like to say something?
Yes.
Go ahead, Jerry.
In regards to our public trust meetings, you know, basically we just have a difference in philosophy. George thought the first meeting was a waste. I thought it was a great meeting. So here we are. One goes one way, one goes the other. As far as the last meeting, I thought there were some good things came out of it last Thursday. There was it went a little sideways here and there. The in regards to the accusations about Tom, you know, for every action, there's a reaction. Somebody doesn't just get frustrated and say things unless something happens to cause that. So for every action, there's a reaction. It seems like there's some folks out there that have a vendetta against Tom, some political activists. Whenever they get a chance, they get up and berate him, twist things around, and you know, it bothers me. I don't care what they say about me, but it bothers me because, you know, and I'm not sticking up for Tom, but I see him doing much more than most anybody in town as far as trying to make our community better. There was two members of the public that made comments and were called liars, and to me that was just as egregious as some of the other stuff that went on. So, you know, like I say, everybody has a different take on what happened and what went on. And we just are different. We're different, and we should recognize that. I have a different take on the way things should be, and I'm sure that the other side, so to speak, does too. So certainly I think we can, you know, get by this and get better, but right now we're pretty splintered.
I'd like to...
Well, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but like I said before, maybe this is a perfect example of why we should have it taped. Then it's on the record, and no one was called a liar. There was a comment made that some statements were patently false, but no one was called a liar. And just make that abundantly clear.
Councilmember.
Well, I'd like to clarify for the record the lies and the whispering campaign that's being done by at least the vice president of the A Better Atascadero and probably numerous ones. But I think it's really out of line, like Jerry said. I can, you know, you want to attack me, that's fine, but you start attacking my wife, that's another matter. So let me put it clear for the record. 8 years ago, Supervisor Mike Ryan attempted to use his political influence as supervisor in his reelection campaign to make accusations of my wife. And those accusations never went anywhere. There were no charges filed. There was nothing that happened, except we passed a resolution or an ordinance in Atascadero that all the candidates are supposed to sign that says that if you put, and this is what Mike Ryan did, if you put your campaign signs on public property, and this is a public, this is a private property rights person, and he put his political signs at the post office and in Caltrans right away.
That's egregious. And
I guess, and Mike, what I'm saying is, you know, treat everybody equally. It seems like Tom gets jumped on pretty hard all the time. And,
well, I'm not in control
of that. I'd stop
that
too.
Councilmember O'Malley, you had a final thought.
Yes, and again, I think the one thing hopefully we can all agree on is what I've suggested for some time is we have a process where any accusations can be reviewed, and then we make a statement back, and it's something we can all agree on, what are the facts. And I certainly welcome that. I think that would be good for the public and for us, but I do think there's been a lot of unfounded accusations, and it does seem to be there's more tolerance of them when they're directed towards Jerry and I than others, and I think we just need a fair process, and I hope that's something Ellen and I can work on our committee.
Yes, I encourage that. So I assume we're at the end of council reports. And so let's move on to committee reports. I have no report. And Mayor Pro Tem Barreau?
On Integrated Waste Management Authority, we did discuss an upcoming, it's called a Needles or Sharps Take Back Program, and it's a similar format to the battery and the fluorescent bulb take back program that you'll be able to return any needles. I'm thinking about like diabetics and people who use needles as part of their medical care. They will be able to turn them back into the place where they bought them, usually their pharmacy. It's also a way to make it safer for the people who handle the garbage, and there'll be less sharps in the landfill, which would be safer for everyone. There is no city schools meeting or committee. And then regarding our public trust meeting, I did mention earlier that we have not had a chance to meet. And we, Tom and I, will probably work on when we can meet next. And then we will come back with further recommendations. Thank you.
Councilmember Clay.
No report.
Councilmember Luna.
No report.
Councilmember O'Malley.
No report.
All right, we'll move on to individual determination and our action. Anyone from the council? City Clerk Marsha, you had something?
I do. Excuse me. I have just a brief announcement that on the Parks and Rec Commission, the youth reps, you gave the plaque to Ryan Carden tonight, and the other youth rep is also leaving us at the end of this term in June. So I do need to give direction from you that you want me to advertise to replace the youth rep. You actually, in the resolution, you only need to have one youth rep. The reason we had two was because we had two apply that were so great that we didn't want to choose between them. And usually we have somewhat of a difficult time finding kids who want to serve for a long time. So these two were great and were on for a long time, and we were kind of spoiled by that. But so I would like direction from you that you do want me to advertise to replace at least one or both of those youth reps.
And hopefully there's some waiting in the wings to replace a couple of great representatives. And hopefully we'll be doing something for Paige, I assume.
Yes, we will, I think, in the next meeting or two. And with this, for advertising, like for commissioners or whatever, I usually put ads in the paper or whatever. With the youth reps, I need to do more than that. We usually put signs in the school, at the high school and whatever, and we do some little creative advertising to get kids interested and involved. So we will do that if you give me that direction.
Well, presumably we have consensus to do that. Tom, Jerry?
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd like to add something if I could. I will be having a vacancy on my appointee to the Planning Commission coming up. I was going to bring it up at a future time, but if you're going to be doing an advertisement, I'd suggest you go ahead and I can work with you to include that. It probably saves some cost.
That's what our side talk was about.
That's fine.
So you wanted me to advertise for
yes,
your position?
Yes, and I'll work with you on that. Just want to get council consensus. That would be all. Go ahead. You don't want to go to any extra expense, but if we're going to put an ad out anyway, we could.
Well, that certainly sounds reasonable. Is that?
It's your appointee. You can appoint him any way you want.
All right, so.
Thank you.
You have direction, Marcia?
Yes.
All right. City treasurer? City attorney?
Nothing to report.
City manager?
No report.
All right. We're out of here by 11 again. Great.
Great job, Mike.
All right. Thank you, everyone.